All right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are here until 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features like Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. Also, in just a few minutes, Don Coscarelli is going to join us, one of my favorite guys. He is the creator of the Phantasm movies, and he's a great director. He's done a lot of really terrific movies like John Dies at the End, Beastmaster, Bubba Hotep. Well, he's got a new book out called True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking, and it's a terrific book, and he's going to be signing copies of that book, where you can pick it up at the Music Box Theater on Monday night, the 8th, and they're going to screen Bubba Hotep. And so Don's going to join us to talk all about that and his book. Scrabble has added some words. So we're going to jump into board games, fun board games, and we've got much more to talk about this morning and all of our regular Friday features. Let me say hello to my great producer, Dan Shagrew. Hello, Dan.
Howdy, Nick.
How are you?
Good, man. How about yourself?
Good. You know, the Hawks looked good last night.
Yeah,
well,
glad to hear it.
Not great in their own zone. Could have been better in their own zone, but the offense looked good.
Good.
And we'll get the Express coming up later on. By the way, all of our guests this week have been on the phone, but if they had joined us in studio, they would have been in the PPG Paints green room. It's a beautiful room, and it's all decorated for Halloween now. They've goofed it up Halloween style. So if you were walking around and go into the PPG Paints green room, you'll freak out. So just letting you know. And let's say hello in the newsroom to Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Hello, sir. Good, doing well.
Good. You only got two classes left, right, for your...
For improv at the Second City. Two more to go.
Okay, and you had a good time last night?
Great time.
Outstanding.
Needs sleep.
Needs...
Period.
All right, we'll try to stay awake this morning.
Oh, yeah, we got plenty of coffee.
All right, very good. Very, very good. So that's what's happening here. You can call us at 312-981-7200 for talk or text. You can also follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is our Facebook page, and it's facebook.com/Nick D Show. So like us there. All right, we're going to break here, and when we come back, we will have filmmaker Don Coscarelli with us. Back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here high above downtown Chicago, and we are here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and Steve Cochran at 6 has your morning drive. My next guest is a good friend of the show's and mine, and one of my heroes. Don Coscarelli is a filmmaker who has made some great movies, including the classic Phantasm, which regular listeners to this show know how much I love that movie. Saw it over 100 times in the theater when it came out in 1979. Just screened it recently at my Nick DiGilio Film Club. And he's also made some amazing, great films. Right now, though, we've had him on the show many times. And, you know, any time to have Don on the show is a good time. But he's written a new book, and it's a terrific book. It's called True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking. It's out right now. If you want to read a book about what it's like to really be an independent filmmaker and how crazy some of the stuff is and the struggles and the stories and the interesting behind-the-scenes stuff about filmmaking, this is a tremendous book, a great book about filmmaking. And you can get a book and get it signed on Monday, October 8th at the Music Box Theater. It starts at 7:15, and Don's going to be there. Don will be there, and he's going to talk about the book, do book signings. Books will be available to buy there, and they are going to screen with Bubba Hotep. And there you go. So let's welcome Don back to the show. Don, how are you, sir?
Nick, I'm doing great.
Good.
It's always a pleasure to be on your show.
It's always a pleasure to have you on my show, Don. You know that. Hey, congratulations on the book.
Hey, thank you so much. You know, I genuinely appreciate it because it's my first effort at writing something 300-some pages in length. And that's nice to hear that you like it. That's really wonderful to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't. I'll be honest with you, Don, I haven't finished it yet. But I just got it like a couple of days ago, so I've been ripping through it, and I really, really love it. And there's so many great stories in here. And, when did you come up with the idea to write the book?
Well, you know, I always wanted to do some kind of fiction. You know, I wanted to do some kind of writing to try it out. I've done a lot of writing and screenplays, but never really tried, you know, that. And I was thinking of trying to do something narrative. But, the publisher I was friendly with, they had done the David Wong, John Dies at the End books. And also, you know, had made a huge amount of money off of Bruce Campbell memoirs.
Yeah.
And so they suggested, oh, why don't you write a memoir? And I started thinking about all the, you know, because I've been telling these stories to aspiring filmmakers for all these years, and I thought, geez, I could put that down. And I started putting it together. And, you know, I try to do it from a perspective of, you know, for somebody who had interest in how these movies were made or how to possibly break into the business, to try to let them learn from my mistakes. And hopefully that's a success.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's really something, because, like, you really are one of the few really independent filmmakers that are out there. I mean, it's not like you haven't had struggles with the powers that be over the years. But I mean, this is, you are truly the definition of an independent filmmaker. Is that something that you're proud of, obviously?
Hey, Nick, I've been trying to sell out for years now. Just kidding. no, listen, I found my own peculiar little niche. You know, it's very strange because, you know, I had a few very, not the greatest business skills, but I had some. And I also found, I learned how to make, you know, I realized that if I could figure out a way to make movies on a reasonably tight budget, there might be an excellent chance of making a profit and at the same time make the movies that I wanted to make.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of it was that attempt to do that. And over the years, I think I perfected it. Although, like I said, man, have I made some mistakes and gotten in bed with the wrong people.
Yeah.
And all of that. But I think my errors might be instructive to other people.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, you have made the movies that you wanted to make. Like, you set out, I mean, you're, you know, the movies, I know your sensibility as a filmmaker. Whenever I see one of your movies, when it's over, I'm like, yeah, Don got to make that movie. That's his voice. It's a very distinctive voice that you have.
Yeah, listen, I have some odd taste, I guess. But look, I somehow try to find a way. You know, the other thing was is that, you know, I had all this success originally with Phantasm. I was, you know, pretty young, in my mid-20s when that happened. And you can see with some of my confederates and, you know, colleagues in the independent horror movie world, boy, you have a little success, you are just stuck and pigeonholed, and the only way you can get money funded is if you make another horror film.
Yeah.
And so, I've tried to get funding for other, I have other tastes or whatever, but, you know, just had a lot of difficulty. So what I did instead was I kept making what are called horror films, but I tried to do something a little different, you know, and tried to, you know, do one about a, you know, 4,000-year-old mummy,
right,
in a rest home, which old aging Elvis is battling. And then what John dies at the end, it's about, you know, obviously this very strange interdimensional street drug that people are taking, and they're not coming back the same once they go on these trips. And so, they have horrific elements, but I can, you know, push the envelope a little and go into some interesting different places.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned Bubba Hotep, which they are screening on Monday night at the Music Box. And Music Box is just a beautiful theater, too. I got to introduce Phantasm Remastered when it premiered at the Music Box a couple of years ago. And it's a beautiful place to watch movies, and I think you're going to have a great time.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah, thank God they're preserving it and keeping it going.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing is that you got to have these movie palaces. You can't let them go, because how else are you going to get people off their couch from their inexpensive big screen TVs watching Netflix all night long?
Yeah.
You know, you need something, you know, big and grand like that. And it's where, you know, where it's really an experience to go out and see a movie.
Yeah, it is. And and you'll be there, and people can get the book and you'll sign it. It's $40 with the book,
yes,
plus the film screening, and it's $10 for just the film screening only. And if you've not seen Bubba Hotep, people, you need to see it. a wildly original movie that we were early on that one, Don, because
you and Mike Kurz were right there at the start, because Mike had invited Bruce Campbell out to his convention, and you guys screened it there, and that was, may have been, certainly the first Chicago, might have been the first screening east of the Mississippi, for sure.
And you know, and that was the very first Flashback convention, and you know, that's how long ago it was. No.
You're kidding.
That was the very first Flashback convention. Yeah.
I still got the photos that Mike sent, and you might be in some of them with those dioramas with the mummy that they had set up and a whole Egyptian crypt that they built. It was quite beautiful.
They did a great job, and we saw the movie. And it was at the Pickwick Theater in Park Ridge at the time, nice big movie theater. And I was blown away by it. I just thought it was so original and so weird and so funny. It's a great movie, and people really are going to have a great time seeing it on Monday night.
Oh yeah, no, it's good. We just had a screening here at Beyond Fest in LA last night at the Egyptian Theater on Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah, here you go.
Yeah, we got a full house, and man, that movie still plays after 15 some years.
Yeah.
It was really satisfying.
Yeah, it's a terrific movie. Well, listen, let's start at the beginning. When did you start to want to be a filmmaker? When was it always something that was in the back of your mind?
Well. Probably the night I went up and saw 2001 A Space Odyssey. It was the first time I really appreciate, between that and Goldfinger, those were, I always say, the two formative movies, because that was the first James Bond movie, I thought, and I loved the action sequences in that, and also the, there's some transgressive violence in that Goldfinger. Yeah. Remember when they crushed the Lincoln Continental with the guy in it, in the crusher. That was pretty. And then, of course, you've got Oddjob with his hat that he, chops women's necks with.
Yeah.
Pretty crazy stuff. But that, and then I saw 2001, and it was like, it's like an art film, and you really see that there's more to it. And those things really got me going. And, have my parents had a little camera, and I started, experimenting with a neighborhood pack of friends, and made westerns and spy thrillers and all kinds of things. And then I got this crazy idea in my head that I could really actually one day make feature films.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things that spurred me to come back and tell the story in the book, because it was really like this Cinderella story, because I convinced my father had a good year in the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
And so my neighborhood friend and I sat him down and just browbeat him and tell him, we need you to invest in a movie, $25,000. And he agreed. It was amazing. And so we started shooting this movie. It was completely out of control. So my dad would call up the local LA Times, Los Angeles Times film critic, back when film critics would pick up their phones.
Yeah.
And this film critic, super cool guy, and he would just say, oh yeah, well, when the boys are done with the movie, I'll take a look. Maybe I can give you some idea. So we screened the movie for him, and he seemed to like it, but wasn't knocked out. But like a week later, he calls up and he says, oh, I had lunch with the president of Universal Pictures. I told him about your movie, and you've got to get the film over. He wants to watch it. And we sent we took our film over there. He watched it, and they made an offer, and my dad freaking got multiples of his investment back, and all the actors got paid, and it was just like a Cinderella story, because my neighborhood friend, we were 19 years old, we got our own office on the Universal lot.
How about that?
In Universal City, California, to do the post-production on the film. And it was like, we went immediately from the lowest you can go to almost the highest you can go in like a period of about 1 year. It was amazing.
Yeah. Wow.
And as I say in the book, the first night we finished the movie, it turned out nicely, but it didn't gross. And so, they told us not to let the door hit us on the way out.
Right.
And I've never had an office on a studio lot since.
That is such an incredible story. There's so many incredible stories in the book. And now, but one of the other things that I really like about you, Don, is that you're very loyal to the people that you work with. I mean, Jim the World's Greatest, you continued to work with, at least two of the cast members of that throughout your entire career. And then the same thing with Kenny and Company. You had these stock guys. Angus Grimm was in your first movie.
Yes, he was. He was the first adult actor I ever directed, and it was funny because I co-directed it with my neighborhood friend Craig Mitchell, and boy, it would drive Angus crazy, because you know, like I'd go up to him after a take and say, oh, that's a little big. Bring the performance down. And I'd walk back to the camera, and I didn't know Craig was walking over. He'd go, you know, bring it up. It's just too subtle. And we'd give him conflicting, you know, and Angus just would like, and that's, I think, where he, now we should explain to the audience, you know, Angus is the star of the Phantasm films, or
yes.
He was,
yes.
He's dearly departed, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But he had this towering, commanding presence as a horror, classic horror star, but I think he really perfected that raised eyebrow glare that he used in Phantasm when he would like look at us when we give him that conflicting direction on
so
the
that,
set.
So that's where it came from, huh? That's where it came from.
Don, hang on
a second, okay, Don?
Yeah, sure.
All right,
sure.
We got to take a break. There's Don Coscarelli is with us, a great filmmaker, director of Phantasm and Bubba Hotep, Beastmaster, John Dies at the End. He's got a new book out. It's called True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking. You can get a copy of the book, have it signed at the Music Box Theater Monday night, October 8th, and then stay for a screening of Bubba Hotep. More with Don Coscarelli coming up right after this. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude, 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. every weekday morning. And my guest right now is Don Coscarelli, the creator of Phantasm and so many other terrific movies. He is now an author. His book is called True Indie, Life and Death in Filmmaking, and it's all about his adventures in making movies and telling great stories. And he will be here in town at the Music Box Theater on Monday night, October 8th. Starts at 7:15. You can get a book, have it signed. He's going to talk to everybody, and then they're going to screen Bubba Hotep. You can get information at musicbox.com, musicboxtheater.com. You can also check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/NickDShow. So let's welcome Don back to the show. Welcome back, Don.
Hey, Nick, great to be on your show.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it. So some of the other stories in here, there's one that involves Catherine Keener. Let's talk a little bit about that, because she's, you know, obviously now become like this really amazing actress that people know from 40-Year-Old Virgin and so many other things, and she's in Jim Carrey's new show, Kidding, right now, and she's great on that. But you cast her in the first time in one of her first roles, right?
Yeah, I think it may have been her first role. I think she had one little walk-on the show, but this was a real, you know, she was like the co-star of the movie with Lance Henriksen, and she actually met her future husband, Dermot Mulroney, was also on there.
Wow.
And Mark Ralston, another great actor. As I tell in the book, we almost killed her.
Yeah.
It was horrible. We were shooting a water sequence. It was a river rapids, and this backpacking adventure I made called Survival Quest.
Right.
And so we had this wilderness survival school, and this river, the only river we have near Southern California, is called the Kern River. And it wasn't until we were well into shooting that I learned that its nickname was the Killer Kern. And then I heard this other really morbid story, Nick, where, you know, it's a dam-controlled river, if they shut it down up at the dam, it just goes almost dry. And every year at the end of the season, they shut the river down, and then the corners go down, and they usually pull three or four bodies out of the river,
and
then people drown there. It's really dangerous. And so this is where we were filming, and there's a scene where the Survival Quest team members are trying to escape from some bad guys, and so they throw their backpacks and they jump off a cliff into the river, and they're carried down the rapids. So that's basically the scene we're going to shoot, right? So we take all the backpacks, and the prop guys put a flotation foam rubber in so that the backpacks will float. But somebody didn't get to her backpack.
Oh my God.
And it had these rock climbing ropes that just absorb water, and the thing got heavy and started to sink. And it was like my last directions. I said, and she's a method actor. And I said to her, Catherine, whatever you do, don't lose the backpack. Hang on to it. So everybody jumps in the river. They're kind of riding their backpacks down the rapids, and they're all doing great, and hers is starting to sink. And she's just trying to keep her head above water and going in there. And luckily, the raft We had some RAF safety guys down beyond the camera. But it, to me, it looked like great acting, you know. So I thought she was just doing her method thing. But we did. We got her out, and she survived, thrived, and went on to a quite illustrious career.
Absolutely.
Just some great movies.
It's a great story, yeah. Too. You know, what's interesting about this is that, you know, that's not the only person that was in danger. You were in danger quite a bit during the makings of these movies. I mean, you open up the book with a story about you trying to get giving Bill Thornberry an actual shotgun, having him pop out of the CUDA and shoot it, and that's how you open the book. Well, it's like a monstrous action sequence that you almost got killed.
Well, Nick, I always thought that blanks, you know, when you put a blank round in a gun,
right,
they're safe. Well, they're not.
No.
Because they make a big bang, they've got gunpowder, and they shoot a lot of flaming wadding and other debris at a very high muzzle velocity,
yeah,
too, so you can't get too close. But, you know, we were, you know, the scene intimately, having,
yes,
seen it 100 times in the theaters, Nick,
yes,
which I'm still in awe of. Yeah, Phantasm. We're in that black muscle car, 1971 Plymouth Barracuda, and Bill Thornberry pops up through the sunroof with this pump shotgun, and we had 4 blank shells in there, and he needs to shoot at me because I want to get him shooting towards camera. So I'm in the trunk carrying this big camera, and we're racing down the road, and Bill pops up. He's just like an action star, you know, boom, boom, he's just shooting, and I can see this beautiful muzzle flash going right by camera. Look, epic, you know. And then, you know, got the shot cut, and then camera pulls over, and I had put like this camera pad on my face just in case something came, with some aluminum foil wrapped around it,
right.
And we had this one of our best, our stuntman and driver, his name was George. He was like a hardcore surfer. He just jumps out, comes running over to help me with the camera, and he goes, dude, you're face is on fire. And they had to tear this thing off, and luckily I felt the heat, but it didn't really get to me.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of that was just total inexperience. Thank God nobody was seriously injured on any of those. I take my safety much more seriously,
oh, yeah,
obviously, now, because
yeah, yeah,
I know on some films these kind of things go wrong, and
yeah,
it's horrible.
Now, it took a long time. It took a long time to make Phantasm. You shot it over the course of a couple of years at least, correct?
It was a full year, and then
yeah,
editing took a year, so it was about a 2-year process. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, that was the trick, and that is something that I, you know, my wisdom I'm trying to impart in the book to aspiring filmmakers is that, you know, when you make a film like this, you have to be so careful about how it's scheduled, and you always need to build in some kind, squirrel away money, so you can come back and get what we call pickup shots.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times a scene doesn't get shot right, it doesn't play that well, but boy, you see it in the editing room, if you can come back 2 or 3 weeks later and shoot like one little close-up or get a shot of the actor looking in this direction or something, you can really make the scene sing. And so that was one of the things I learned and tried to impart, you know, along with, you know, some of my suggestions is, you know, how one can break into the movie business if
yeah,
one wants to.
You know, the interesting thing about the way that you made Phantasm, what I find fascinating about it is that you shot a lot of footage, and you know, the movie's 90 minutes long, but you guys shot a ton of stuff, right?
Really did. It was a long script, and we shot it all. A lot of it, though, was, you know, character development. Now, somebody like you would probably love to see the 3-hour version.
Oh my God!
I'm not sure the average moviegoer would enjoy it.
Are you kidding me?
Anybody who was a Phantasm would. So I think that's something that's sort of on my list one day when I, you know, I don't know, and I somehow found some time, would be to try to reconstruct some of that material, even if it was just something like as a bonus feature on a Blu-ray.
I would be thrilled, obviously, but I'll tell you what, I'll tell you something, Don. I freaked out when I saw Oblivion, because you used a bunch of footage that was clearly shot for Phantasm, and you put it in Oblivion, and I felt like it was a gift. I was like, oh my God, I was so happy that there was like all this footage that you didn't use in Phantasm that you put into Oblivion and did really well. And I love seeing that stuff.
Wow, that is so cool to hear that. Yeah, see, that was in Oblivion, just to bring the audience up to speed. That was the fourth Phantasm, and I'd started to run out of money at that time as to how to make a fourth Phantasm on a reasonable budget. And I had just coincidentally gotten a phone call from the MGM lab, and they were unfortunately closing down. And they said, we have these cans of film of yours here. And I went over and picked them up, and they were all those outtakes and lifts from the previous versions of it. Mm-hmm. And I held on to it over the years. And I thought, well, I could take some of these scenes and write them in the Phantasm Part 4.
Yeah.
And, yeah, of course, it's a budget-saving move, but it's also interestingly bizarre because you have scenes where you got Michael Baldwin playing scenes at age 12 and then, you know, playing them at age 40.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, that you don't see that too often.
No, you don't. I was thrilled with that. Don, hang on, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Don Coscarelli is with us, and we'll take a break and come back and talk more with Don. His book is called True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking, a really terrific book about the world of independent filmmaking and making movies in general. You can get your book and get it signed on Monday night, October 8th at the Music Box Theater at 7:15, followed by a screening of The Great Bubba Ho-Tep. We'll talk more with Don right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6. My guest right now is Don Coscarelli, creator of Phantasm and so many other terrific movies, and he is also the author of a terrific new book called True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking, and he will be here in Chicago at the beautiful Music Box Theater on Monday night, October 8th, 7:15. You can get a book. He'll sign it. He's going to talk, and there's going to be a screening of The Great Bubba Ho-Tep. So let's welcome Don back to the show. Don, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Nick, always.
And congratulations. Seriously, I want to say congratulations on the book. It's quite a beautiful thing. By the way, who did the artwork on the cover and the back cover?
Oh, isn't that amazing?
It's awesome.
That's a guy named Rob Grom is his name, and he actually works his day job. He does all the books over at St. Martin's Press, but this one he just went to town on.
Oh.
And he had done a terrific cover for David Wong's John Dies at the End. And I was talking with the editor, and I said, well, couldn't we get the guy who did the, let's do something weird, you know? And so he just took elements from my movies and made this just gorgeous work, I thought.
It's beautiful.
And strangely bizarre.
It is. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's fantastic. It really is. Kudos to him for doing such a beautiful job. Now let's talk a little bit now, since they're screening Bubba Ho-Tep, and we were on top of that one in 2002. but it was an interesting,
wow.
It was, yeah, 2002. That's when we screened it. That's when they screened it at Flashback, and I had you on and Bruce on, to talk about it. That was the first time you and I ever talked, was in 2002.
It was.
Yeah.
Well, Nick, you've got great instincts. What can I say? It's amazing. I mean, obviously, look, you sniffed out Phantasm at the beginning, too. So you've got, your movies.
I have to say, what's really funny is we've talked about this before, Don, but one of the trying things about seeing Phantasm as many times as I did in the theater was I had to sit through Prophecy a lot. Because it was because it was a double feature. It was double feature with Prophecy a bunch of times, and so I would go see Phantasm, and I'd want to see Phantasm twice, so I'd have to sit through Prophecy, which is a terrible movie. So
hey, if I'm not mistaken, the second issue of Fangoria magazine, they were going to cover Phantasm, but they didn't put Phantasm on the cover. They put Prophecy on the cover.
Yep.
But I think it was bad because it was that big, bloody bear head.
Yeah.
It looks so ridiculous.
Yeah.
It didn't do them any favors.
It didn't. But shockingly, though, directed by John Frankenheimer, who was a tremendous filmmaker. And but anyway, I saw that movie way too many times, more than I should have, just so I could sit through Phantasm again. So
that's amazing.
Now, Bubba Ho-Tep was interesting on how you got that movie, how you released it. Talk a little bit, because you did it in a very unusual, very, very independent way for Bubba Ho-Tep.
Well, we went to all the film festivals. We'd had great screenings, like the one in Chicago that you got, Mike hosted.
Yep.
And, we knew that the movie played, but the distributors just didn't get it. It was so... incredibly frustrating.
Yeah.
What can you do? And then as Bruce Campbell liked to say pithily, Bubba Hotep was a movie that wasn't released, it escaped. And I think he's right on there, because what happened was is that I met a guy who's an independent booker. His name's David Schultz, and he had gone to a big screening we had here in Los Angeles, and he said, you can make some money with this. I can start booking it into theaters if you can come up with a little investment and help me with it. And so I basically stopped making movies for 6 months and became a film distributor.
Yeah,
and thank God he was right. It did great.
What was that experience like to be a distributor? Independently distributing your own movie, was that an adventure in and of its own?
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's a tremendous amount of grunt labor, because back then we were, the film was the format was film.
Right.
those film cans, like 50 pounds, and we had like 35 prints, and every day, you'd have to decide which runs were ending and which ones were starting, and try to allocate where the prints are going, and load them in the car and drive over to FedEx and DHL and ship them off. And it was an exciting time, though, because the other thing that was really cool is that we had access to a fan base of Phantasm fans and Evil Dead fans.
Yep.
And we put them to work helping us distribute. My son was in charge of it. This was before social media had really caught on yet. I think it was like MySpace was just starting back then.
Yep.
And he would get people to volunteer to be street team leaders in each city. And then we'd start by sending them like a small little kit of like Bubba Hotep swag, like a poster and a couple of flyers. And then if they put them up, and then they'd send us back pictures and go, oh, this is a good person, we'd send them a big box of them, and then they would go around and just do street level marketing for us, and then send them signed posters and invite them to the premieres, and they became kind of partners. It was great.
It's so great. I mean,
fans helping, it was great.
That's such a grassroots thing, man. I mean, just that is such a great story, and the movie is so good. I remember when it officially opened here, because when they screened it at Flashback, it didn't have distribution or anything yet, and it was a year later when it finally showed up here in Chicago, and me and Eric Childress split the duties hosting the screenings along with Bruce came to town. It was at the Landmark Century Cinema, and there were four theaters that were showing it at different times, and we would introduce it, it was a great night.
We were sophisticated by that time, because anytime Bruce would go to a screening, it would sell out.
Yeah.
And so, we couldn't make him stay there for 6 hours, but it was easily to, especially because the theater owners are all, just like everyone, they're greedy and they want to make a lot of money. So they were happy to stagger the screening. So like he would introduce, screening number one, just as the one in number two was ending, he'd go across the hall and do a Q&A, load up the other theater, he'd go back in, and then you guys were tag teaming on the introduction.
Yeah. It was an amazing night, and there were so many people there, and Bruce works the room. Nobody can do a Q&A like Bruce. I mean,
look, he's a brilliant actor, but he's also a brilliant comic and comedian.
Yeah, he's so good.
Any Evil Dead fan knows, and it's starting, nowadays, I mean, a lot of people, know of him. But, I mean, he really, they should have given him Johnny Carson's chair or something like that. He could have done it, I think.
Yeah, he's great. And it was that night was really special, because, I got to, hang out with Bruce, and we were introducing things that were going to the event. And then there was an hour and a half between the last screening. They were going to do a midnight screening, and Bruce was going to introduce that one. And so I'll never forget this. I can't remember the name of the bar on the corner where we were on Clark and just, like, two blocks away. We went to a bar, and the place was packed. and everybody recognized him, and there were people who were, you know, who had just seen the movie. Bruce was buying drinks for everybody. We were having tequila shots. it was incredible. And then we went back, and I introduced him at the midnight showing. It was a great night, and a lot of people saw it that night, and you know, obviously loved it. It's such a great movie, and it's going to be so great to see it again on the big screen on Monday at the Music Box. It's just going to be fantastic.
Yeah, really excited to be there. Yeah. You know, Chicago is a great city.
Yeah.
I wish I'd learned about Chicago earlier in my life. The first time I ever came was when you and Mike brought me out to Flashback.
Oh, is that right?
Then I realized
Wow.
It's my first time.
Yeah.
But,
you guys have all come out. You know, it was great. 2008, you guys came out, and that's when I got to meet all of you guys for the first time. And then 2014, you guys came out. And you know, I feel like I'm part of the Phantasm family, and, you know, I'm actually...
Nick, you are. You're memorialized in all the DVDs.
I know.
The interviews from those.
I know, and I'm so thrilled.
You are part of the Phantasm family.
Well, listen, course. Don, it's always a pleasure. I'll be there Monday, obviously, and I'll see you Monday. And I'll be at the Music
Box.
Oh,
great. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
Oh, so exciting.
I wouldn't miss it for the world. So I'll be there on Monday. And we had a lot of fun watching Phantasm with my film club the other night. And that's the Phantasm remastered version where the first, and I told this story on, the first time I saw the movie, or the first time I saw Remastered, you and your wife were sitting next to me, which is, you know, insane. And so when the movie started and, you know, you had the Bad Robot logo, the Sphere Bad Robot logo, which is so cool.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And then the Avco Embassy logo came up and I gasped.
Yes.
And you laughed because you knew that, you know, because
yes.
the Avco Embassy logo had been missing, you know. And when I saw it, I went, like, I couldn't believe
that
it.
Was a seminal part of your youth.
Yes,
I knew
it
that
was.
Because that logo was, it's kind of a silly logo, but it's kind of cool. And the way that it was remastered, it's just freaking gorgeous in that.
Yeah.
Thing.
It preceded so many of my favorite movies, you know, like The Fog and Escape from New York and Prom Night and all the. And Phantasm, that I just seeing that logo, I went, oh my God, I already loved Remastered. So, but anyway, Don, the book is great, and I hope everybody gets it. It's called True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking. If you're interested in filmmaking at all, it's a great book about that. If you're a fan of the Phantasm universe and Coscarelli's work, incredible stories in it. And the Music Box event is Monday night, October 8th at the Music Box, 7:15. Don will be there signing books, and they're going to show Bubba Hotep. Don, always a pleasure. You're the best, and I'll see you on Monday.
I return the compliment. Thank you, Nick. Okay. Have a great evening, and I'll see you there.
Okay, take care, buddy.
Take care.
Don Coscarelli, everybody. Yeah, and the book is great. True Indie: Life and Death in Filmmaking. You don't really have to be a crazy Phantasm fan like me, or a huge, you know, fan of Don Coscarelli's work. If you're just interested in directing filmmaking, if you're interested in stories about independent filmmaking, this is a tremendously awesome book. Get a book, get it signed on Monday night, and we'll see you at the Music Box for Bubba Hotep Monday night at 7:15. All right, we'll take a break. We'll be back after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. We are 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. We're here until 5 a.m. It is Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday. It's coming up. That's where we dedicate some time to some funky stuff and to some R&B and have a great time playing it. DJ Shagru will play the tracks. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We also do Straight Out of Context. That's when you listen to this radio station 24/7. Whenever anybody says anything that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty and it makes you giggle like a 10-year-old, jot down the day, the time, who said it. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Also, Nick D Show Spies. That's when you listen 24/7 to this station. Whenever anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, you become a spy. Jot it all down. Send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. And we have You Big Dummy. You Big Dummy is when we read real news stories of real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. Many of them get arrested. I think, Dan, do all of them get arrested?
Sometimes a ticket.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're still en route or still under investigation.
Sometimes they get away and, you know, they're looking for to ID the person that did the dumb thing. So, and then we'll do that. And if you want to be a part of that, you can. You find a link to a funny, dumb story of a guy or a girl doing something dumb and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Say, hey, Dan, I'd like to read this on the air. We'll figure it all out. You'll read it on the air. And on top of that, you'll get some Lou Malnati's pizza. So it's a win-win-win situation. And also, we will need our third vote. Since Esmeralda is not with us every week, we need a third vote. So after we recap the dummies, we'll open up the phone lines. The first person through will be our third vote on who wins Dummy of the Week. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number here for talk and text. We would love to hear from you now. We're going to be talking about board games. Do you guys still play board games? What are your favorite ones? And which ones did you play when you were a kid? Or what are your family's favorite ones? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. We're going to hear from you on that. Dan, you a Scrabble player?
I was in college.
Oh, so it was just that? It was just college for you?
Yeah. I know this sounds pretty dorky, because it is, but on Wednesday night, there was no bar specials at the bars that were easily accessible to us, so we had Scrabble and Muffin Night.
Right. I remember you telling about this.
We would go to the lovely Perkins restaurant, where they had 2-for-1 muffins every Wednesday, mm-hmm. and load up on muffins, and then come back, have a couple beverages, eat some muffins and play Scrabble.
See, that sounds like a lovely. That sounds like a lovely.
That's a
evening.
Lovely Wednesday.
There's
evening.
No question about it. Were you being called Leon at that time?
I was not. That was post. That was my second game night group of friends. So
okay,
this was college game night friends. So.
All right. And Vic, did you play board games when you were growing up? Do you have any favorites?
Well, so as far as Scrabble goes, I do not have that skill where you can. Kind of quickly figure out a word from a mix of letters.
Yeah.
I suck at that. So
yeah.
I never really liked Scrabble.
Yeah.
My brain doesn't work that way.
And you know what? That's legitimate, though, Vic. That's totally legitimate. There's a lot of people out there who just have so much, have trouble with that.
Jeannie is awesome at it, of course.
She must have been happy about yesterday's outcome for the Brewers, right?
Oh, yeah. We actually watched it.
Yeah.
You asked me yesterday about if I hope the Brewers win now that I kind of was rooting for the Brewers last night.
Yeah.
I was, but anyway. You know what we play at my house?
Mm.
Especially since I'm doing improv now, it's taking classes. We play reverse charades. And
reverse
we love
charades.
It. When my kids come. That is a blast
now,
with
what's,
your kids.
Explain reverse charades, because I know what charades is, but...
Well, I'm not current on the rules of the game. I just do what my kids tell me to do. I just get up. Basically, to me, it seems like charades. But and we may be playing with some sort of house rules. I don't know. They read the rules, Nick.
Oh, okay. You're just following along.
Right.
Oh, okay.
I basically just... It seems like charades to me. Basically have a person telling you... you have...
Act out what's...
It could be a group of people. There's a couple of us acting out, and then one person's guessing as we act
out. Yeah,
I think that sounds like regular charades. Pretty sure we're playing it wrongly.
Yeah, no, charades is a fun game. It is. I mean, that's a classic, You can play that anywhere. All you need is some paper and some pens, you write stuff down, throw it in a hat, and go to town. You know what I mean? That's it. It's simple. Well, Scrabble, you might want to tell Jeannie this, Vic, if she's so good at Scrabble. They're adding 300 words. Now, if you're playing Scrabble, Dan, as you know, how often did you challenge?
We would challenge because our friend Jackie was that one in the group who was always better. So we'd always challenge something, just because it would be probably a word. But it's like at this point we need a Hail Mary to win, so we're gonna challenge it. So maybe once a game, just for fun. Yeah,
yeah. I didn't play Scrabble a lot when I was younger. When I was a little bit older, I played more, but that wasn't a game that was. Was in my house growing up. And, most of the board games that I played either with my parents because I'm an only child, or if I had a couple of friends over, we would play. Scrabble, Scrabble became like really big, on the computer and online and Words with Friends, which Alec Baldwin liked to play on a plane. he refused to turn off his device because he was playing for... Do you remember the bit that they did the following week on SNL?
I forgot.
Okay, well, he was... Okay, so for people who don't know, is it about 10 years ago?
Yeah, probably.
Something like that. About 10 years ago, Alec Baldwin. Did he get kicked off the plane, or I don't think he get kicked off. He made a scene, and I think the plane was delayed because of it. But I don't think they did. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they did kick him off the plane. I don't remember the detail.
He was kicked off.
Oh, he was. Okay, so he was kicked off the plane. And what airline was it?
American.
It was American. All right. So he refused to turn off his phone because he was playing Words with Friends, which is basically Scrabble, but you're playing it with other people online. And so he refused, and he made a big scene. They kicked him off the plane. All right, so this obviously made, you know, national news because he's a big celebrity, and he refused to turn off his device. They kicked him off the plane. Then the following week, or the week that it happened, that next Saturday, they were doing Weekend Update, and they said, we have, you know, I want to say Seth Meyers was the... Seth Meyers, I believe, was anchoring Update at that time. And he said... Well, right now we want to hear from, you know, they tell the story about Alec Baldwin, and right now we want to hear from the pilot, the American Airlines pilot, about his version of what happened during this incident. And they come out, and it's Alec Baldwin with a pilot suit on and a mustache, and he's doing like a southern accent, and he's like, I think Alec Baldwin was treated terribly on that plane, and you just started. And then Seth is like, you know, Alec, everybody knows it's you. And he's like, oh, I got this, Seth. It's fine. Don't worry about it. And so he keeps going. It was a really, really funny bit. And he was talking about maybe you didn't want to, maybe Mr. Baldwin had a really good score going and got to use a cue, you know, or so, it was something to that effect. But it was a really funny bit. So Scrabble has become, you know, very popular in the interwebs and all over the place. I mean, variations on it, Words with Friends and stuff. But they've added... Now, do they have, like... They do have a Scrabble dictionary, right?
They do have an official, both online and physical Scrabble.
So you can look it up to see if it's right in the actual... Well, they've added 300. Now they've added 300 words. That's a lot of words, right, Dan?
That is a lot of words.
I mean, that would extend your Wednesday night game for a little while.
Sure.
Scrabble players might find themselves twerking their way to victory soon as hundreds of new words have been added to the game. The sixth edition of Merriam-Webster's official Scrabble Players Dictionary includes 300 words such as twerk, beatdown, and sriracha. And it finally adds a common two-letter word that players have been waiting for use for decades. Okay. Oh, that was not legal, right? Okay.
That was not legal.
All right. For a living language, the constant is change, said Peter Sokolowski, editor-at-large of for Merriam-Webster. The official Scrabble Players Dictionary evolves to keep up with English as it is used today. The modernization of the game's lexicon can be seen in recently added words like Bitcoin, facepalm, and emoji. Entries like sheeple, people who are docile and easily influenced, and listicle, derived from internet lingo. They might. What's listicle? Do you know what that is?
I do not.
Well, apparently I guess it's legal now. It's been added to the Scrabble dictionary, but that's internet lingo.
A piece of writing or other content presented wholly or partly in the form of a list.
Like a lot of the stuff we do on the show.
Yes.
Because it gets conversations going.
Right.
Additions.
So a list article.
A list article. I got it. Okay. I thought it was referring to something else, but I didn't want to. That's why I was wondering, what is that? Additions like these will add a new layer of fun to game night, making gameplay even more entertaining and relevant, said Jonathan Berkowitz, who's the president of Hasbro Brands. Cue words are always tough, especially those without a U in them. And players can monetize with the word Kapik, which is a unit of currency that's used in Azerbaijan. The updated version of the Player's Dictionary continues to follow some of the game's most important rules. Words must still come from a standard dictionary. No abbreviations, capitalized words, or words with punctuation are allowed. Other words that were included include yowza. Yowza! Macaroon. Zomboid, resembling zombies. And I've never heard... I'm a zombie fanatic, Dan. Okay? Zombies are some of my favorite things in the world. Zomboid? I've never once used that word. And I am friends with many zombie aficionados, and I consider myself a major zombie aficionado. I've never once heard or used the word zomboid, resembling zombies, and puggle. So puggle is finally in there. So, all right. Well, now, so that's Scrabble. So they've added, the 300 words to Scrabble. And so now you can twerk. You can put twerk down. And so, anyway, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. If you're a Scrabble player, how do you feel about these 300 new words? So that means you got to get the new Scrabble dictionary because, you know, obviously the new one's completely, or the older one is completely outdated, big time, if they've added 300 words. So... now, Scrabble, if you buy Scrabble now, it doesn't come with the dictionary, right? The Scrabble dictionary, you got to buy it on your own.
Ours did not.
Yeah.
I don't know, but obviously that was a few years ago.
Okay. All right. Well, and then...
The online is free, though. The online dictionary is free.
Oh, it's free, so you could just log in and check it out. Oh, I see. All right. Okay. And is it just ScrabbleDictionary.com or something like that?
It's Scrabble.com.
And then you can go to the dictionary page. Okay. All right, cool. Scrabble, you know, is considered, I have here a list of the 30 best board games of all time, and Scrabble is number one. I don't think that's surprising, right, Dan? I mean, Scrabble.
No, I mean, I think one of the things is that obviously you could play it all ages.
Yeah,
you know, and it's been around for so long.
Yeah, yeah, and well, here's how they. I really loved how they break down the way that they rate the.
Yeah, it's
the,
pretty
the board games. It's pretty cool. So they have the these are the scales that they have. The data and selection process for the list of the 30 greatest American board games is based on a triangulated key term searches on Amazon.com controlling for relevance and reviews, plus the estimated total sales at BoardGameGeek.com. The games are rated on four 5-point scales, according to one, their nostalgia rating. Example, their classic status with American society and culture lasting multiple eras, indicating by their self-replication and appearance in popular television, film, video games, and other media, indicated in their respective Wikipedia entries. Okay, so nostalgia rating. And then next is their play rating. That would be user intuitive and age-appropriate ability to be played and enjoyed, indicated by qualitative ratings on Amazon.com and other review sites. And then next is their cult rating, which is their communities formed online in message boards and niche enthusiast sites, and any awards indicated by Wikipedia or BoardGameGeek.com. And then finally, their education rating, which is the ability to develop age-appropriate skills from fine motor skills to memory and strategic thinking, and any relevant awards or recognition for these characteristics for information at Wikipedia or BoardGameGeek.com. There are no losers on this list. And let's see what's going on. So Scrabble comes in at number one, and it scores really high. I mean, it scored altogether in the four categories, 95% it scored. Nostalgia, it gets 100%, which of course makes sense. It's been around. Everybody knows Scrabble. Play, 90%, because it is easy to play. Cult, 90%. And education, obviously, 100%. That's way the highest score. That's the highest score of all the board games, according to this methodology that they're doing. So, but we want to talk board games with you guys. Which ones do you guys love? What are your favorites? And I can tell you whether or not and how they scored on this review list here, according to these four categories. And we can look it up for you and find out what the score was. And we'll talk a little bit about that kind of stuff. But we would love to hear from you. And do you guys still play board games? I know in this, you know, electronic tech society that we live in, some board games have fallen by the wayside. But what are some of your favorites? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. All right? All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll jump back in and talk about it. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago. And we're here until 5 a.m. It's Friday. That means Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. And we want to hear from you. The phone lines are open and the text lines are open. We're talking board games. And we've got a real interesting way that this website has rated these board games in four different categories: the nostalgia rating, the play rating, the cult rating, and the education rating. And scoring high, huge in all four of those categories is Scrabble. And we started talking about this because Scrabble has now added 300 new words to the dictionary that you can use in the game of Scrabble. And but that got us talking about board games and games in general. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. And let's see. Ike in Country Club Hill says, Perfection and Connect 4, and they recently made board games out of movies such as Terminator, Big Trouble in Little China, The Thing, and Rambo. Rambo 5 is filming now. Jeez. That's funny. I didn't know that there was a mention of The Thing here, Dan.
How fortuitous.
Because I was just telling Dan off the air that I have to purchase another copy of The Thing on Blu-ray because it's a limited edition steelbook from Scream Factory, which has... four different discs. One of them is all extras with new documentaries. There's all common new commentaries. There are three versions of the movie, including a 4K Blu-ray version, an incredible steelbook case, and a collectible lithograph. So I have to buy this movie. As I said to Dan off the air, I have purchased. This will be the fourth time I've purchased John Carpenter's The Thing. Be the fourth time I purchased it on CD, DVD / Blu-ray, not to mention the VHS that I had. Let's see. 301 area code says Clue, Scrabble, Uno, and Monopoly. In college, we played Risk, Diplomacy, and a few others. Yeah, Risk is a classic, and of course, I I'm such a dork. I think of Seinfeld every time I hear Risk because Newman and Kramer have that long going game where they hide it in Jerry. They put the board game in Jerry's apartment so that neither of them will cheat, and they're playing it on the subway. It's just ridiculous, but yeah, Risk is a very popular one, and that's a game that could play for a long time. Like these guys, you know, they could play that for hours. Mark the Bread Man says, my current favorite board game is Chutes and Ladders that I play with my 5-year-old, Saoirse. Oh! You named your kid Saoirse. That's Mark and his wife. Megan is a girl I worked with as a stage manager for a couple of plays many years ago, like 15, 16 years ago. So they've got a 5-year-old. They named her. Now, is that the only... I've never heard another Saoirse other than the most adorable woman on the planet. I could listen to her talk all day long. If there were just like recordings of Saoirse Ronan talking, I would just have them playing constantly. That's it. All right. Well, let's see what we have next here. So Scrabble comes in at number one, and it's obviously a classic game. Monopoly comes in at number two, and they score for nostalgia 100%, obviously. Play 90%, cult 100%, and education 80%. It's perhaps the most iconic American board game of all. And it's a game dating back to 1903. It's a family multiplayer classic with a board, set pieces, two stacks of cards, a bank of cash, famous Monopoly money. Play is advanced by the throw of dice, and the game is known to last for hours. Hey Dan, when you played Monopoly, how did you guys pick the banker? Ooh. Was there a way to, or would people just go, "I'll be the banker"?
Yeah, it was pretty much how it went. Just somebody just did it.
Yeah, some of the games that we've played Monopoly, a lot of the times, like if I played with a certain amount, like if I played with my cousins, Jeff was always the banker. My cousin Jeff was always the banker. We was just like, all right, we didn't argue with it. He wanted to do it, and you know.
What occupation does Jeff have now?
Jeff has passed away. Mm. He worked for the electric company.
Mm.
Yeah, he passed away back in 2011.
I'm always interested to know if you know the people go on to jobs like accountants.
Wait a minute, no, that's funny banker. That he worked at the electric company, considering that the. That the electric company is an integral part of Monopoly.
Yeah.
I didn't even think of that. Maybe that's why he went into it.
Yeah.
But no, if he would, he was not into banking. I know that.
He just took charge.
Yeah.
Took it from the team.
Yeah. I mean, he was good with his money. I know that much. But yeah. But that was the thing, you know, like, and I know people would fight. Some people would fight over who would be the banker. So, now, did you ever play Monopoly? Like, did you ever have any, like, epic Monopoly battles?
It wasn't a big game in our house. We only played a few times, and we never did, like, you know, buying properties and things like that. It was more just, you know, till you ran out of money and you... You know what I mean? Like, we didn't build the hotels or anything like that. So that shortened the game significantly.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. All right. So Monopoly comes in second, which, of course, makes sense. And then third is a game I've never played. Is it Catan? Catan?
Catan.
Catan.
Yeah.
Catan. That's the game where you...
you eat apples wildly.
You eat apples wildly and you act like Mr. Peepers and Mango. That's what you have to do. So, Catan is... Why do I not know this game?
I know a little bit about it. It's pretty... It's like the Dungeons & Dragons.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll talk about
content, but just in terms of following.
That's... Okay. I got it. All right. All right. Well, we'll get into that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking about board games. Do you still play them? What's your favorites? News next. All right, welcome back, everybody. Morning. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio on a Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday coming up straight out of context. Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all of our regular features. We're here till 5 o'clock, and right now we're talking about the best board games, and a really interesting, you know, how these board games have been scored in this particular list. And they were scored by nostalgia value, play value, cult value, and education value. And we've been talking about this because Scrabble has now added 300 more words that are usable during the game. And that got me to thinking about board games in general and which ones do you guys love? Which ones did you play? Which ones do you still play? 312-981-7200. Here's Ray on WGN. Hey, Ray.
Yeah, a board game that we played a lot. Back in the day, it was called Parcheesi.
Oh, yeah, sure. I remember Parcheesi. I don't remember how to play it. Do you remember? Can you remind us how it was played? I remember playing Parcheesi.
Kind of. I remember it was a board. It was just like a race around the board, and you would go up and down, up and down. I believe it was a very popular East Indian game.
Okay. Yeah, I just remember playing it. I remember the name of the game, and I remember playing it, so... Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, thank you, Ray.
Sure.
Parcheesi. Yeah. So now back to this this game that we mentioned before the break, Catan, which was a game that I've never played, and I don't even know if I ever knew it before I read this. Catan engages players to successfully develop, manage, and earn victory points for the rich island of Catan. Vying for resources, navigating incidents, and maintaining resources are a few of the issues that players must govern. A huge hexagonal tile board, which can be rearranged for each game, creates new options and fresh play that makes up the island of Catan. And it got scores of 80% nostalgia, 85% play, 100% cult, and 100% education. Yeah, I've never played it. You know, and Dan, you were saying that it's got a following, clearly, which is why it got 100% in the cult category.
Yeah, yeah, people who play it, like, obsess about it.
They obsess about it, okay. Let's see. We 262 area code says Mastermind and Stratego. I don't know. Do you know Mastermind?
I do not.
I don't know Mastermind either. I know Stratego. Stratego was a game. I played that game all the time. I love Stratego. But I don't know Mastermind.
Code-breaking game for two players.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see.
Stratego's for two players, too.
Yeah, two players decide in advance how many games they will play, which must be an even number. One player becomes the code maker, the other the code breaker. The code maker chooses a pattern of four code pegs. Duplicates and blanks are allowed. The chosen pattern is placed in the four holes covered by a shield, visible to the code maker, but not the code breaker. The code breaker tries to guess the pattern.
Wow. All right. Mastermind. 262 area code says, my parents love playing the game Sequence. Does it have a rating? And it didn't make the list. I don't know that game either. Do you know Sequence?
I do not.
I don't know that one either. We're learning about some new games, or at least I am. I didn't know about Mastermind. I wasn't aware of Catan. And I don't know what Sequence is.
But you might recognize it. It's got cards, like playing cards on a board.
Mm-hmm.
And then the object of the game is to form rows of five poker chips on the board by placing chips on the board spaces corresponding to the cards from the player's hand.
Oh.
So I've never played it, but I've seen like the board. I've seen that game.
You've seen it before.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so that's Sequence. 312 area code Trivial Pursuit, a.k.a. That Wedge Game. Yeah, we'll get to Trivial Pursuit clearly on the... You can't have a list of board games. And man, you know, Dan, you were born right around the time Trivial Pursuit, I think, was released. Because it was the early 80s when it came out. And I'm telling you, man, it was a phenomenon. Like, everybody had Trivial Pursuit. Everybody was playing Trivial Pursuit. And it just blew up. I mean, it was that and the Rubik's Cube, like right around the same time, both of those things like completely went through the roof. And everybody, we used to play Trivial Pursuit. We still play Trivial Pursuit, you know? But I have like the versions that nobody will play with me. Like I have the Seinfeld Trivial Pursuit, which no one would play with me. And I have the Seinfeld, Seen It, which no one will play with me. I have this Saturday Night Live Trivial Pursuit and the Saturday Night Live Seen It, and nobody will play that with me. We played it a couple of times, and we did it as teams, and everybody wanted to be on my team because they were like, "Well, I'm going to be on DiGilio's team." They're like, "You can't." This was when I was with Heather, and she's like, "I'm his partner, so just shut up. Nobody else is going to." So, because I'm such a geek. Yeah, Trivial Pursuit is a great game, though. I mean, all the versions of Trivial Pursuit, you know, just the regular Genesis version and all the other versions, the little offshoots. It's a really, I don't know who developed the game. I don't know who made it, but it's a really great game, and it endures, you know. It's a simple game, too. And, you know, I'm trying to remember the bar that used to have Trivial Pursuit cards on the bar. They would have, like,
yeah. I know that...
It wasn't maybe just one bar, maybe a few bars.
Yeah, I know Burger Belly, formerly Lead Belly, does mm-hmm. that.
They have the Trivial Pursuits, yeah. Card. And anyway, I think Ricochet's did it for a while, too. I think Ricochet's had, like, you know, those things. It's cool, too, because you're just sitting there like, all right, here's a little conversation starter.
Yep.
815 area code says, they now have a Monopoly game with electronic purchases, no banker needed. Oh! And then it says, I'll take Checkers any day. Look to the classic. All right. Now, here's another one I don't know, which comes in fourth on the list. Very high on the list, Dan, and I don't know it. Quirkle? Q-W-I-R-K-L-E. It was created in 2006. That's why I don't know it. I don't know if I've purchased a board game in that time. But Quirkle. So it gets a 90% total score, 80% nostalgia. How can it be nostalgic if it came out like 12 years ago? Is what it... play 100%, cult 80%, education 100%. Created in 2006, the award-winning Quirkle. Does anybody play this? 312-981-7200. Takes a fresh approach to tile-laying games. With 108 vibrant pieces displaying combinations of six different shapes in six different colors, players work to create a Quirkle by housing the tiles based on common attributes of color or shape. Working with a bag of tiles, players select six tiles and can lay one to six tiles in a single line on a playing space. As long as the tiles share common attributes, points are awarded. Players also have the option to exchange tiles with a toss of a turn to choose more tiles from the elusive stash. Players must maintain six tiles at all times, and the game continues until all the tiles have been chosen, and one player uses all of their Quirkle tiles in play. The player with the highest point tabulation wins. It's simple to learn, but addictingly hard to master. I do not know Quirkle, but according to this, people really like it. For logic lovers and the strategically minded, Quirkle is a new game with a time-honored and instantly classical feel that's won several coveted awards for its educational merits. It's a mix between Tetris puzzles, adversarial strategy, and geometric manipulation. This is a game that engages the mind but also motivates competitors to perfect gameplay and strategic vision. Wow. Okay. People like the Quirkle. I don't know it. Risk comes in next. Risk gets a rave score of 87.5%, nostalgia 90%, play 70%, cult 100%, education 90%. A simple goal of acquiring and defending territory launches into a strategic military gem with Risk. Appealing to players of all ages, Hasbro's dice-rolling war game hits themes of diplomacy and conquest and will go down in history as one of the most popular board games with a major fan base of enthusiasts. Pieces range from foot soldiers to infantry to artillery, each assigned with increasing point totals. These pieces occupy and defend territory against other players as one conquers an entire continent. At larger point, a larger point per turn is rewarded. There are various options for shorter or longer gameplay, and battles can test, and players can test their various options for shorter or longer gameplay, and they can test their luck in the game by opting for a dice-determined battle if they can match the set pieces in a territory, which allows an under-resourced player to compete against a more robust army. The last player standing wins. Good old Risk. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Board games. Here's Elizabeth on WGN. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi.
We used to play a game called Memory. There were 108 little cards. You turn them down, and everybody would get a chance to turn one card over, and then you turn it back down, and then you would try to find its mate.
Yeah, that.
Did you play it?
Yeah, I mean, isn't that also known as concentration? Isn't concentration the same thing?
No, this is called, well, I'm 85 years old. So.
Yeah. I think maybe concentration sounds like it's the same thing. I mean, maybe you guys called it memory, but I think it was
the game had, it was a regular box, and it had memory across it. And then we used to play something called Facts in Five.
Mm-hmm.
And something called Battleship. We had that before it was manufactured by the game person. We used to make our own on a piece of paper.
So you would play Battleship, like homemade Battleship on a piece of paper. That's really great. That's very, very cool. Yeah, Battleship was a big one for me, too. I loved Battleship. I thought Battleship was a lot of fun. Elizabeth, thanks for the call. I really appreciate it. Have a great morning. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah. Let's see. Hey, Tracy Butler's listening. Hi, Tracy. We love Tracy Butler. Thanks for listening, Tracy. She says, I love Mastermind and card games like Hearts. She likes to play Hearts, Tracy Butler. She loves Masterminds. Well, there you go. If Tracy Butler loves it, it's got to be good. That's what I'm saying. 630 area code says, what about a good old-fashioned euchre? You have never played euchre? Dan, have you ever played it?
I have not.
I mean, it's a game that I know of. I've known, I've heard, I know the name, and I know that people play it. It's been around forever. You ever play Pinochle?
Nope.
Pinochle's fun, man. Pinochle's a good card game. Let's see. 815 area code says, we love playing simple games like Guess Who and Memory. Oh, well, there we go. We have another one that's Memory. Isn't it? But Dan, look up Concentration. When it was a TV, it was a game show. But I'm pretty sure Concentration is the same thing. It's a board. You flip one thing, one tile over, and it has a picture on it. And then you have to, that one flips over, and then you have to find it, its match.
So the Concentration I'm looking at on eBay, it seems to be like, It might be a version of that slash like, okay, this one makes this picture, you know, 1, 5, and 7 make a picture.
Oh, right. Okay. So it's that. Okay. All right. Yeah. That's different then. That's different than in memory. You have to make the whole picture, you know, you got to get the whole picture connected, right? Okay. Oh, I know what you're talking about. All right. We hate to play Risk. As a matter of fact, I don't know anybody who likes that game. Really? 302 area code, backgammon. It's hard to beat for pure strategy and execution, and world tournaments are held. Yeah, backgammon is a fun game. Fun game. All right, 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and why don't we take a break? I think we should do that. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk more. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio is here. That's me, and we're live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Coming up, all of our regular Friday features, Fly Jams Friday, Straight Out of Context, Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all coming up. Also coming up, the stories that matter, with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. That's all coming up. We are talking board games right now. What are some of your favorites that your family's played? We've got this really cool list here, an article that really goes in and talks about some of the greatest board games and does a really cool breaking down how they score it. In the categories. There's the nostalgia category, the play category, the cult category, and the education category. And the granddaddy of them all, according to this article, is Scrabble. And the reason why we started talking about this is because Scrabble has just expanded their dictionary. 300 more words have been added to the game Scrabble that you can play, that you can use. So 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Which games do you love and which games are your favorite? Okay, let's see. Axis and Allies, 86.25% rave score. Nostalgia, 80%. Play, 85%. Cult, 80%. Education, 100%. Did you ever play Axis and Allies?
I did not.
I played it a few times. It wasn't sort of my cup of tea. I had friends who really liked it, and I played it a few times. But it's employing military tactics. This game, loosely based World War II, brings out the strategic commander in everyone. Unlike other games that begin with from a blank slate, gameplay for Axis and Allies begins already immersed in wartime action. The Axis expansion is at its peak. The major powers of the world are teetering between complex allied relationships. Enter game players who must make critical decisions to employ attacks, strategically enter territories, and ultimately liberate and take occupation of cities. It's got a complex board. It's got cards, dice, coins, plastic military figures. The game can become tactical battlefields in a way for history buffs, and historical fiction fans will be thrilled. So there you go. Lots of awards that has won for Axis and Allies. And, yeah. All right. Now, here's one that I played constantly. This is one of my favorite board games of all time. And I still love it. And that's Clue. Rave complete score is 85%, nostalgia 90%, play 80%, cult 90%, education 80%. Who did it? Clue creates detectives of all of us since 1950. As players gather information to successfully deduce who, where, and how the crime was committed. A mansion is the setting for the board, and players move around the rooms, hallways, and secret spaces as they figure out who to suspect, which weapons were used, and where the crime was committed. The plot commences with secretly stashing one card from each category in a closed fact envelope. Players then roll dice to move along the different spaces of the mansion, stopping along the way to deduce the answer hidden in the envelope. Once a player feels confident that they have answered the facts of the case, they venture to making an accusation. If they are wrong, they must sit out and effectively lose the game. But if they successfully solve the three components correctly, they become the winner. Yeah, Clue's a great one. That's just a classic. Classic game. I mean, I love that. And there are now, like Monopoly, there are different versions of Clue. Like, I know there's a Simpsons Clue and other, you know, variations on it. And just like Monopoly, there are tons of different kinds of Monopoly. You know, there's all kinds. Now, Dan, Clue, you've played Clue, obviously.
Sure.
Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
It's a great game.
It is. Did you enjoy the motion picture Clue?
I did enjoy the motion picture Clue. That was one of those on every 3 days HBO specials.
Yeah. Yeah. Now,
showed all the endings.
They showed all the endings. So remember when the movie came out, people might not remember this, but when the movie Clue came out, it had three different endings. And, you know, the theaters you would go to, one theater would show ending A, a different theater would show ending B, and a different theater would show ending C. And the thought process by the film company was that, hey, they're going to like this movie so much, they're going to want to see it three times to see the three endings. That's not what happened. It's become a cult classic now, the movie. But when it came out, it was not a hit at all. And that whole gimmick about, you know, trying to get people, the audiences, to see it three different times. Oh, I saw ending B. I want to go see ending C and ending A. That didn't work out. Luckily, as critics at the critic screening, we saw all three endings. I can't remember which one was my favorite. I'm not a big fan of that movie, despite the fact that it's got an amazing cast. Like, a ridiculous cast. Tim Curry is unbelievable in it. I will say that. Tim Curry, as the butler, he's amazing and awesome. And Madeline Kahn, who, God bless her, one of the funniest women that's ever walked the face of the earth, has really funny moments in that movie. Dan, you remember the flames when she does she gets so angry? Flames? I think you could probably see if you can find that. Madeline Kahn, a clue, flames. It's just her talking about how angry she gets and that flames come out of her face. Or something. I just remember that. I remember just almost falling out of my chair laughing at that. And it's one of those movies that, like you said, Dan, shows up on cable. And you watch it, you know what I mean? Like it's on, and it's fine. But a ridiculously good cast, and led by a really great Tim Curry, who has never Tim Curry has never been bad in anything, as far as I'm concerned. He's even amazing in
yes,
Legend.
I did it.
Anyway,
I killed Yvette. I hated her so much. It flames on the side of my face, breathing. Breath, heaving breaths, heaving.
But while we were in the billiard room, Miss Scott seized the opportunity.
It's just this little moment, but I think everybody loves that moment. I don't think it would have been singled out on YouTube. You know what I mean? But that's right. Like, that's her face. That's the best. That's actually my favorite moment in the entire movie is Madeline Kahn. God, I miss Madeline Kahn. She was so funny, man. Oh, my God. And her in Blazing Saddles. In everything. She was so great. Yeah, man. Oh, boy. All right. Battleship is up next here. Gets an 82.5%. Nostalgia, 80%. Play, 80%. Cult, 80%. Education, 90%. Humbly starting as a pencil and paper game during World War I. Oh, that's how our listeners started playing it, with just a pencil and paper. Playing Battleship on a pencil and paper. Battleship keeps opponents guessing which grid coordinate will successfully target and eventually sink their enemy's five ships. And it's because that's a great one. Do you remember Electronic Battleship?
I do not.
Yeah, it would go. It would make noises. If you missed, it would like plop into the ocean or something. And if it hit, you blew up the battleship, it would explode and make noises. It was Electronic Battleship. That was tech savvy, Dan. When that thing came out, I was like, ooh, the future.
Fancy.
Yeah. All right, let's break here for the news, and we'll come back. We'll jump into more. Everybody hang on. 312-981-7200. People online. And if you want to text in, it's 312-981-7200 for more board game talk. Oh. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios here, and we're here until 5 a.m. I'm the overnight dude here, 1 to 5 a.m. every weekday morning, and Steve Grzanich will be here at 5 with the opening bell, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 will have your Friday morning drive, and it is Friday, which means Fly Jams Friday will be coming up straight out of context. Nick D Show Spies, You Big Dummy, all of that stuff. Right now, we're talking about board games, and this all started... this all started with the story that the Scrabble is bringing in 300 new words that you can use in the game, and that got us talking about board games and which ones you love. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200 is the phone number, and we've been talking about some of the scores that have been given to certain board games, and they are split into four categories in this website. They judge nostalgia value, play value, cult value, and education value. And we've been talking about Scrabble, turns out to be number one in all of those categories. So we'd love to hear from you. 312-981-7200. Here's Mike on WGN. Hi, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
Checking in from the 618. Area of the state on my way home from work.
All right.
Just got to say, we're lucky that we right now we live in a massive renaissance era of board gaming. They've got tens of thousands of new board games out there. A lot of them inspired by like Settlers of Catan style games that had some of the European influence in it. Got a lot of new good games out there right now. Games like pandemic where the players actually work together and try to prevent, treat and prevent global epidemics. Games like Ticket to Ride, Carcassonne, some great games out there right now.
Yeah, no, I know that a lot of really great games are being created and have been for several years now, and I know that that people are playing a lot of these new games. I don't have any board game stuff at home anymore, like the new board games and stuff. You know what the last thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate it. Dan, did you ever play Apples to Apples?
I did, yes.
That was a fun game. That was relatively new, right? Wasn't that early 2000s,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah.
That one, we played that. There was a time when we played that constantly. Right. I remember one New Year's Eve, bunch of us were at a party. It was a New Year's Eve party, and we played Apples to Apples till about 6 in the morning.
Wow.
You know? It was New Year's Eve, so we were drinking as well, but 6 in the morning, we just nonstop Apples to Apples. I think that's a great game.
That is a great game. That was another favorite of my post-college game night friends. Actually, a friend of mine announced she was pregnant using cards. You know, you can make your own cards online.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we played that game a lot, and we actually had the creator of Apples to Apples on my show. Like, when it first came out, I had the creator on, and they sent me... The company that manufactures Apples to Apples sent me the wooden crate edition, so it looks like an apple crate, and it's made of wood, like solid wood, the box, and it slides open like an apple crate. So they sent me like the deluxe version, which was pretty cool. No, but that's one of those games that's addictive. It really is.
Yeah.
You know? When Heather and I used to go to the movies at the park at Grant Park on Tuesdays when they used to do the movies at the park during the summer, we would meet up with a group of people and to kill time because you want to get there early and get a nice spot, so you get your blanket, you get out there, and you know, don't tell the park district, but we had wine and we would have some food, and we would play Apples to Apples until it got dark when the movie started. We would, and that was one of the things that we did. Everybody, you know, make sure you bring a copy of Apples to Apples so that we can kill some time before the movie, because we're going to get there like 2 hours before the movie starts. So that was always fun. Next on this list is Jenga. Now, okay, nostalgia 60%, play 100%, cult 100%, education 60%. Really? Dan, really? 60%? What are you learning when you're playing Jenga? How not to knock stuff over?
Right.
Do you ever see the giant Jenga?
Oh yeah, those are hilarious.
They have one in the Big Brother house. They had a room that was like it was a room with a door that you can go in and just chill out, and they had a giant Jenga. And there were so many times, you know, if you turned in, you know, to the late night version of it, or if you turned into the feeds, there are people in there playing Jenga for like 9 hours, and it was the big goofy Jenga, giant Jenga. Again, never good at Jenga, and I think you know why.
Shaky hands.
I'm not. I can't play Operation. I think I killed Captain. What's the guy's name? Orifice.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Orifice or something. But the guy who's operating on an Operation. Captain Cavity or something.
Cavity Sam,
right. So Cavity Sam, that I lit that guy's nose up. I killed that guy on the operating table 8,000 times because I got shaky hands. I've always had that. I don't know, you know, what it is, but Jenga, I was never good at Jenga because of my crazy shaky hands. So, Now, how does Jenga score higher than Trivial Pursuit? Come on.
The only thing I can think of is that you don't necessarily have to be as well versed in the world
to play Jenga.
Right. I mean,
I guess.
You just need a pair of somewhat steady hands.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see. For Trivial Pursuit, nostalgia 80%, play 75%, cult 80%, and education 80%. Trivia buffs are created around the Trivial Pursuit board. Trivia buffs are created around the Trivial Pursuit board, allowing a single player or team play with 6 challenging categories spanning geography to sports and leisure. So the board itself is a wheel, and everybody knows how to play Trivial Pursuit. I think that should have been higher than Jenga. That's just me. Much higher than Jenga. 708 area code says, my 9-year-old said he wants to learn chess. We just bought the board. I'm excited to teach him this classic strategy game. Dan, you play chess?
I did a lot when I was younger, not now.
I haven't played chess in many, many years. I'm not very good at it. I can tell you right now. It's a game that I learned. I know how to play it, but I didn't. You have to play it
right. A
lot in order to get, you know, really good at it. I haven't played it enough to be good at it. I did like Searching for Bobby Fischer, though.
Excellent film.
Oh my God! Whatever happened to that kid? Max Pomerac, I'll never forget that. The kid is so good in that movie. If you've not seen, here's the thing. Searching for Bobby Fischer is a phenomenal movie. Steve Zaillian wrote and directed it. Fishburne, Ben Kingsley, Joe Mantegna, Macy's in it. I mean, don't even, please. And this kid is a star. Joan Allen is in it, too. The kid is boy, all of Steppenwolf is basically in the movie. But anyway, it's an astonishingly good movie, and it's like it makes chess it's as exciting as watching any sports movie. Wouldn't you agree, Dan?
Oh yeah, very much so.
I mean, how would you think making a movie about a kid who plays chess like tense and exciting and outstanding? Like, I would never have thought that. It's a great movie. If you've never seen Searching for Bobby Fischer, really, seek it out, because it's great.
According to this, he is the head of strategic policy at Airbnb in New York City.
You're kidding. That's what he's doing now?
Yeah, apparently so.
Good for him. How old is he now? Because that was 93 when that movie came out. He was probably, what, 11 maybe? 10 or 11 when he made that movie, I think.
34.
He's 34, so he's still a kid, but man, God, what a good movie. Patrick says Monopoly was
He was in definitely maybe.
He was?
Apparently. According to Wikipedia.
Well, that's your movie, man.
That is my movie.
Well, he probably looks different than he did
Yeah, but still.
Yeah. He was an adorable kid, though. And on top of it.
He was one of the campaign workers when Ryan Reynolds was.
So a small role.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now he's working for Airbnb. That's pretty amazing. That's pretty cool. Yeah, the kid was great. His performance was great. He was heartbreaking, too. Like you know, the relationship he had with Kingsley was so complicated, complex, and great. And God, Mantegna is so good in the. I'm going to watch that movie when I get home. I've convinced myself right now that I need to bust out Searching for Bobby Fischer and watch that again.
Joan Allen's speech about
whether
both of them are tugging too hard on
him. It's ridiculous, man. It's such a good movie. I like when he's like, they have the final match. I won't give anything away, but they have the big final match and they're all watching it like on TV. And the kid, you know, this is a little kid and he's in this unbelievably tense, you know, situation. And Lawrence Fishburne is like the street chess player. You know what I mean? Like the guy who plays in the parks on the street with the timer and everything. And so his technique is a lot different than Ben Kingsley. I remember there's a scene in the movie when they're all watching, very, very tense, you know, moment. And all the parents, there's also a really wonderful scene where they kind of like isolate the parents. They keep the parents. They got to keep the parents away from the kids who are in the tournament. That's what Macy. They it looks like they're in prison. They've locked them up. But anyway, so they're watching it, and the kid makes a move, and I'll never forget this. Lawrence Fishburne goes, "There it is," and he points at this like it's an action scene, like he made this move. There it is. That movie rules, man. Patrick says, Monopoly was always a staple at our house, often going into marathon sessions, ending in arguments with my younger sister. No, I've seen that happen. Mastermind, Parcheesi, chess, Uno, poker, and spades were also big. During the Bulls dynasty era, Trivial Pursuit was played often among our friends. It would be wings, booze, basketball, and board games on a Friday night. Great times. Oh, man. 301 area code says, Patty Vasquez plays Battleship online frequently with one of her listeners, Jasmine. Oh, Jasmine. She plays Battlefield with our buddy Jasmine. Canadian Bill says, what about Canasta? It's always fun to play with three or more decks. Yeah, I know. That's insane. Cribbage, board and counting cards. 815 says, my kids and I would play Clue while we watched either the movie Clue or The Private Eyes with Tim Conway and Don Knotts. Tim Conway and Don Knotts, man. Private Eyes. Also, I would recommend The Prize Fighter if you're looking for some classic Knotts Conway action. Private Eyes and the Prize Fighter. They were in other things together, but those were like total, you know, comedy team vehicles for those guys. Early 80s, if I'm not mistaken. I think both of them came out either late 70s or early 80s. It was Private Eyes and The Prize Fighter. Fantastic movies. All right, let's take a break here. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studios. Dan, somebody posted on my regular Facebook page a clip from Conan from, I guess, last night. And he had Gritty on. Gritty has been, the Gritty, for those of you who don't know, that's the new mascot for the Philadelphia Flyers, and made quite an impression when they unveiled him the first time he went on the ice. He's shooting people with the t-shirt gun. He's falling on his ass. He's like, he's never been on ice before. So, like, John Oliver did a huge bit last week involving Gritty. He's been mentioned on Kimmel. He's been mentioned on Colbert, where they did a whole segment. I mean, it's become, you know, this sort of phenomenon. And so they had Gritty on Conan, and he's like, we're going to find out who's underneath the mask. Like, we want to know who the guy is who's under the mask of Gritty. So they've got Gritty out there. They're talking about how terrifying he looks, and like, it's, you know, it's like the mascot himself is terrifying looking, that he's freaking people out, and we want to get to know the guy who's inside the mask. And he takes off the mask, and his face is like the Gritty mask, only uglier and scarier. He's got orange beard and like weird eyes sticking out of his head, and Conan, you know, after he takes the mask off, Conan looks at him and goes, ah! So they're getting a lot of mileage, I'll tell you that. The Flyers are getting a lot of press. And they're not backing down either. That, like, what's it? I think at one point, somebody said something. I can't remember what it was, but it was like an opposing team made fun of him and said, you know, like, this is the worst mascot, he's scariest looking thing of all time. And then, like, and it was on his Twitter account. It was on because Gritty's got a Twitter account and a Facebook page. And so he said something, and then Gritty's response was, "You better sleep with one eye open." So they're embracing that. They're embracing this thing as being terrifying. You better sleep with one eye open, the mascot says. It's fantastic. Okay, Twister is on the list. 90% nostalgia, 80% play, 90% cult, 50% education. Again, what, you got to learn your left from your right, right?
There you go. I was thinking yoga moves.
Yeah, that's true. Blokus. Or Blokus?
Blokus, I believe.
Created in 2000, award-winning Blokus challenges 2 to 4 players to arrange each of their 89 shapes into a grid-like board. Yeah, that's true. That would be Blokus. Negotiating space and strategically defending territories make this game puzzling and thrilling. 60% nostalgia, 80% play, 70% cult, 90% education. It won a Teacher's Choice Award too. It was a Mensa Select. So Sharon Stone picked it. You know Sharon Stone is a member of Mensa.
I do know that.
Yeah, she makes sure everybody knows that. Connect 4. Our friend Ike mentioned that one a little bit earlier. That gets a 90% nostalgia rating, 75% play, 60% cult, and 80% education. That's a classic one. Connect 4 is a classic one. And the best part is, like, when you're done, you flip that thing on the bottom and all the chips fall out on the table. That's the best part.
Former Chicago Bull Rajon Rondo, he is a huge Connect 4, like, to the point where it's like, almost fist fights with people over.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's very into that game.
Wow, you're really getting into that much into Connect Four. Ah, here it is. Operation. 90% nostalgia, 80% play, 60% cult, 60% education. Now, well, wait a minute now. He's got, like, his Adam's apple, he's got butterflies in his stomach. What do you learn? None of the ailments that Cavity Sam has. His funny bone, you get the
hand-eye coordination,
I guess. Well, yeah, no, seriously, that says using fine motor skills and hand-eye coordination, wannabe surgeon are commissioned to remove body parts from Cavity Sam, Milton Bradley's whimsy patient with the red light-up nose, without touching the electrically charged edges that buzz the failed end of the turn. So there you go. Yahtzee, well, classic. Yahtzee's a classic. It gets 90% nostalgia, 50% play, 50% cult, 90% education. So, as much fun and passion as this game generates, it also involves quite a complex mental operations and probability and overall quantitative skills. It was created in Toledo, Ohio. The game does not replicate itself easily and has proven durable and popular through its iconic lifespan. Yeah, Heather, my ex, was obsessed with Yahtzee. Would play hours and hours of Yahtzee. So, I think Yahtzee's a good game. I think it deserves more than 50% on the play category. It's quite a fun game. All right. Let's see. We've got more texts coming in. 312-981-7200. If you want to jump in, we're talking board games here. In light of the fact that Scrabble has added 300 words to their dictionary that you can now use legally. 312-981-7200. Let's see, 618 area code, Jenga, higher than Trivial Pursuit, flames, there are flames on the side of my face. Very good. Joanne says, I own Searching for Bobby Fischer on DVD, and it is still and will always be in my top 10 favorites. See, there you go. Here's the thing. I don't think a ton of people have seen it, but the people that have seen it, love it. You know what I mean? Like, it might have a small following, but that following is passionate. That's another one. By the way, you know what, Dan? I totally forgot this. That would come in close to Mambo Kings when I was living with Scott.
Ah.
We watched Searching for Bobby Fischer like 9,000 times. Michelle in Geneva says... Johnny Orifice? I'll be laughing at that until Tuesday. Well, thank you, Michelle. That's what they should call. Don't you think Johnny Orifice is a better name?
I think we need to make a knockoff.
A knockoff of Operation.
Robert Cobb, Johnny Orifice.
Called Procedure? We can call it Procedure with Johnny Orifice. 815 area code says, I really like how these games are ranked. Where can I find this list? It's at ravereviews.org for people who want to see this. Because I'm not even and they write a huge write-up on every game. They give you exactly how to play the game, and then they analyze why it's good and what it's good about. And again, breaking it down into the categories of nostalgia, play, cult, and education. If you want to see the whole list, it's at ravereviews.org. And maybe we can throw it on our Facebook page, too. So you can go to Facebook.com/NickDShow or ravereviews.org to get the full article. All right, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up, and then we will wrap it up with our board game talk, and then our regular features for Friday morning shall begin. The news is up next. All right. Hey, welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio here in downtown Chicago, here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6, and it's Friday. That means all the regular Friday features will be popping up straight out of context. Nick D. Show Spies, You Big Dummy, and Fly James Friday. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We are talking about board games, and which ones do you guys love? Which ones are your favorites? What did you play when you were a kid? And we're getting a bunch of texts, and you can talk or text to us right now at 312-981-7200. And let's see. 815 area code says Scattergories. Yeah, Scattergories is a fun game. That's a cool game. 630 area code, I love the original version of Life. I would always end up with about 10 kids in the poorhouse. That's not how you play. Okay, next here on the list is Cards Against Humanity, which is now a really popular. It's really, really popular now, right?
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
It's just huge through the roof. 90% nostalgia, 90% play, 70% cult, 40% education. How about Sorry? Ooh, Sorry. That's how Alex Trebek says it. Let's play a game of Sorry. That's 60% nostalgia, 80% play, 60% cult, 60% education with a total of 65%. Sorry players might have to say sorry as they negotiate space in this Hasbro classic. There have been several adapted versions, including with Disney Pokemon themes, an express version of the game as well. The game is said to be based on the ancient Indian game of Pachisi. Handheld and computer versions have been released as well. Hungry Hungry Hippos is on this list? 63.75%, 90% nostalgia, 85% play, 70% cult, 20% education. No. In that 20%, you learn about the digestive system of a hippo. How they digest marbles. That's the Mousetrap. I always thought Mousetrap was fun when I was a kid. It's this Rube Goldberg thing that trap that you set up. And it would suck when it didn't work. Like you'd get the whole thing fixed and all connected and everything. And if it didn't work, that was not a good thing. Nostalgia, 60%, play, 60%, cult, 80%, education, 40%. Cranium. 55% nostalgia, 70% play, 40% cult, 70% education. It's a great game to bring together board groups of people. Cranium's classic version and its many spin-offs such as Cranium Family Edition, Cranium Party, Cranium Dark, and Kadoo are welcome additions to the gatherings. It's been awarded for its holistic approach and breadth of skills required and involves verbal, imaginative, memorized, and performative exercises in rapid succession. They're taking the fun right out of these games, aren't they, Dan?
Wah, wah.
Chutes and Ladders. That's the game that Saoirse likes to play with her dad. 65% nostalgia, 70% play, 45% cult, 50% education. Based on an ancient Indian game called Snakes and Ladders, the children's classic Chutes and Ladders has players roll dice and climb figures up through the welcoming, vibrant board to advance play. Chutes and Ladders is one of the all-time classic children's games that could even delight a nostalgic adult. All right. Oh, the aforementioned Scattergories is next here. 60% nostalgia, 70% play, 40% cult, 50% education. Scattergories was featured on a game show hosted by Dick Clark on NBC in 1993 and has an app version dedicated to it as well. Based on old parlor games, this version was awarded the Mensa Select winner in 1990 and deservedly so. It requires a quick wit and develops one's sense of intuitive and quick on-the-spot thinking. With rounds lasting under 5 minutes, this game really distinguished itself in the realm of decision-making under pressure. It's an important skill for everyday life. Speaking of life. 60% nostalgia, 100% play, 20% cult, 40% education. You mean there's not a cult around surrounding the game of Life? I don't know why I find that so surprising. It's a Milton Bradley game. You pick cards that are faced with decisions like getting married, adding small or pink pegs, which were children. Savvy decisions and moral choices and a little bit of luck are layered into the strategic play. Some more recent updates try to reward good behavior to make the message of the game a bit more constructive, and many versions of the game have been developed, often with partnerships in popular television film media. One most recent changes try to make the game less reliant on chance, and that remains the main criteria for success. All right. Kerplunk. I remember Kerplunk. That was a fun game. 70% nostalgia, 60% play, 40% cult, 40% education. Don't let your marbles go kerplunk. Carefully draw out a straw from the thicket of 20 to 30 straw, 26 to 30 straws, while not disrupting the marbles above in this quick play family favorite. Yeah, it's like the marbles are all balanced, and you gotta, it's like Jenga, kind of. But you got to pull the little straw out. The game is strategic in the placement and choice of the straws to draw, especially in relation to other players to follow. And it also requires a degree of dexterity and fine motor skills to be successful. A steadier hand will disrupt less than a shaky one will. Really? You think? The main thrill, though, is the suspense of whether the marbles will fall, especially when they begin to slip through the cracks and not quite drop down entirely. It has a few variations based on children's media, like the Toy Story version, which uses a rocket ship instead of a generic cylinder, and then there's also a more portable version of Kerplunk. Trouble and Double Trouble. Pop the dice in the center bubble and maneuver your colored pieces around the board and back to safety in this catchy, punchy table game. Nostalgia 70%, play 60%, cult 35%, and education 40%. It's quick-paced and easy to learn. Trouble's been cranking out mischief since 1965 and is another board game with roots in the ancient Indian game of Pachisi. The game has an obscure cult following and enjoys several releases of themed editions. The world championship of this game is held each year, with cash prizes and accolades being presented to the winner. Trouble has two variations, Frustration in the United Kingdom and Kimball in Finland. The game teaches basic lessons of numeracy and sequencing in a stable and straightforward gameplay setting. All right, next here, Zingo. I don't know Zingo. It's a simplified bingo-like game for early learners. Zingo is perfect for play dates and class adults, so it's a young person's game. It's little kids learning how to play bingo. Good, get them to gamble early. Get them. Nostalgia 20%, play 100%, cult 20%, and education 60%. Reminiscent of matching games, the competitive pressure to call out your match makes the game fun and loud. Also, while traditional bingo is a blast for adults, this version allows for all ages to enjoy. Waiting for the last tile to complete a Zingo is, like its grown-up equivalent, riveting and nerve-wracking. Attention and focus building skills are enhanced, and object recognition creates early understanding of identical sets, similes, and analogies. The ultimate joy is getting to yell Zingo and declare yourself the winner. Of course, Candyland. You can't have a list of board games without talking about Candyland. That's an 80% nostalgia, 60% play, 30% cult, 25% education. Candyland has enjoyed several adaptations, including a full-length films based on the game's characters. While the characters have changed names, Queen Frostine to Princess Frostine and Plumpy has completely disappeared. The candy-coated charm of Candyland has remained, selling over 1 million copies each year. Until the year of 2006, the candy section in Toys R Us in New York City's Times Square had a Candyland theme, and Katy Perry's even used the game as a theme in her album California Girls.
Oh, okay.
Pictionary, pretty low on the list, don't you think, Dan? 28?
Yeah.
Out of 30? Pictionary should be much higher, I think. Much, much higher. 45% nostalgia, 80% play, 25% cult, and 40% education. Pictionary's been featured in standalone television shows twice in 89 and 97. Yeah, they made a game show out of it. And a number of variations in the game exist in other game show formats and video formats. Burt Reynolds, they'd win, lose, or draw. Remember that? It was a Burt and Burt production.
There you go.
Burt Convy was the host. They would have different celebrities on, and it was basically Pictionary. We'd draw on the big, easel.
Didn't our own Johnny Putman star on that?
I believe she did. I believe she did, yes. Yes. And, a little piece of trivia there. The reason why that show got made was because that's what they, whenever anybody went over to Burt's house, this I believe was when he was with Lonnie, whenever anybody would go to Burt and Lonnie's house, they would bust out the easel and they would play it. And the set of Win, Place, or Draw, Win, Place, or Draw, was designed after their living room.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was it. It looked like Bert and Lonnie's living room, so that's when they designed it. Pictionary deserved to be higher on this list. Number 9, Cootie. Cootie. Dan, did you ever play Cootie?
I did not.
Oh, I loved that game when I was a kid. You're basically building a like a bug, like a Cootie bug. 60% nostalgia, 60% play, 40% cult, 20% education. Cootie has high sentimental values with baby boomers and is seen as an icon of 20th century games. Other games like Ants in Your Pants, Don't Spill the Beans, and Don't Break the Ice exist as well, but Cootie remains the one classic among them all. I had all of those games, Dan. Every one of them. Don't Spill the Beans, Ants in Your Pants, Don't Break the Ice. Played that and Cootie. These were the games I played the most when I was really young. You know, like up until the age maybe 9 or 10. But those were games that constantly played those games.
What is the purpose of Cootie?
What you do is, it says, can you build a Cootie? This matching table game targeted toward young children originated in 1949. Using a dice to acquire pieces of the Cootie bug, generations of children have been attracted to this award-winning staple. The idea began as a potential fishing lure, which morphed into a toy that became a game named after the cooties or bugs, like lice. Gameplay is determined by chance, and the process does not vary from assembling the Cootie, but it can double as a toy itself if your patience runs out. See, basically what you're trying to do is build the Cootie thing, and then you can play with it. So, and then finally, coming in last, Pie Face. Do you know what Pie Face is?
I do. This is a Shagru family favorite, played at many holidays.
Is that right? Explain Pie Face.
So it's... I don't know if it's on a timer or if it's not on a timer or something, but basically you press a button. The point is you get a pie thrown in your face for all intents and purposes.
Like for real.
Not a huge pie, but like pie, you know, like we put whipped cream on the hand, you know.
Right.
And you play it and you get the lucky person gets that flung at their face.
A highly sought-after party pleaser, Pie Face players put each of their face into a cutout frame. Oh, you put your face into a frame?
Right.
While spinning a wheel and rotating a lever, one unlucky player will randomly launch a pie. The pie can be shaving cream or the sweeter whipped cream option for a cleaner option, or a cleaner option of a wet sponge. Oh, if you don't want to have fun, sure, put a wet sponge on there.
Way to be a wet blanket.
Yeah. The element of surprise and drama of anticipation make this game highly entertaining and hilariously messy. It's not hard to tell who wins and loses, although good-natured play makes its winners all involved. It's reminiscent of Russian roulette, but with pies. Did you get a lot of pies in the face?
I did not get a lot of pies in my face, but my late great grandmother, to her credit, 93 years old, played that game and got the whipped cream in the face.
Is that right?
Loved every minute.
That's fantastic. All right, Pie Face made the list, Dan.
That is awesome.
Lots of really good games didn't make the list, but Pie Face did. All right, we got to take a break for some weather here, and we'll do some commercials. And when we come back, our regular features begin with You Big Dummy. You big dummy. So, all right, here is your forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center.
Here's dummy. You big dummy.
You big dummy. See what you did?
Oh, no, you big dummy.
You dummy.
Yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, and the regular features have begun. We're about to do You Big Dummy! All the other regular features are coming up, too, and coming up, the stories that matter, with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN Radio. So you know what this is. This is when we take real news stories about real dumb people doing real dumb stuff. We read them, 5 stories, vote on which one we think is the biggest dummy. After I give you the recap, you call up at 312-981-7200. First person through will be our third vote. Dummy number one. Dummy number one. Dummy number one. person captured video of an oblivious truck driver striking other vehicles with a pipe sticking out from the side of their load. The video shows the open-top truck transporting a number of oversized objects, including what appears to be a plastic pipe that ended up sticking out at a side at an angle. The pipe collides with multiple vehicles, including a school bus, without the truck driver even taking notice. Multiple drivers honked at the truck to try to get the driver's attention. It finally pulled over, striking a street sign in the process. It was unclear whether any of the vehicles were damaged.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period.
Dummy number two. Dummy number two. Dummy number two. A Georgia man is accused of stealing 150 pounds of waffle mix from a former employer and flipping it to buyers. Peachtree City Police spokeswoman Lieutenant Odelia Berg told the Atlanta Journal-Constitution that 33-year-old Brandon Lee Nelson is charged with burglary. Police say Nelson drove to his former employer's storage facility in August and stole five boxes of golden malted waffle batter. Berg says Nelson then covertly sold it to buyers who contacted him about the stolen dough. Berg says Nelson later was identified on surveillance video of the theft and was arrested this month. He has since posted bail and was released. It's unclear as to whether or not he has a lawyer.
La-dee-dee, they la-dee-dum is dummy. That's Donna and me. And the dummy makes three.
Dummy number three. Dummy number three. You can see this dummy on Facebook. So that's another reason to like us, our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. facebook.com/Nick D Show. And you can see this dummy on our Facebook page right now. Police in Maryland shared footage of a burglar throwing a rock that bounced off some bulletproof glass and hit him in the face. Prince George's County Police shared security camera footage showing the man successfully breaking into a carryout business in Suitland last month by using a large rock or brick to shatter a window. The quote-unquote bad luck bandit then attempts to use the same object to shatter the glass protecting the front counter. It bounces off the barrier. The man's third attempt causes the object to ricochet and hit him in the face, knocking him to the ground. Police said the man was on the ground for a few minutes before getting up and fleeing the scene. Investigators are asking anyone who recognizes the man to contact the department. I cannot wait to see this footage. I cannot wait.
Have you ever seen him act?
I've been watching him act all his life. Like a dummy. I mean, I didn't know you were interested in gardening.
Why not?
Well, up to now, the only thing you've grown is dumber and dumber.
Dummy number four. Dummy number four. A man found a scenic location in the Colorado mountains to propose to his girlfriend, but the couple ran into trouble on the way down. The Boulder County Sheriff's Office says the man took the woman on a hike Saturday to Jasper Peak at an elevation of nearly 13,000 feet where he proposed. Then they got lost as darkness fell. The couple were showing signs of altitude sickness and dehydration when a hiker found them. The hiker led them to his camp, gave them food, water, and a place to warm up. Another camper called for help. Rescuers reached the camp on early Sunday and walked the couple to their car. They didn't require medical treatment. Deputies say that the engagement is still on.
The only reason I call you a dummy is because I call them as I see them. My only child is a dummy.
All right. We got one more dummy left, and then we will read that one after the news, and then we'll open up the phone lines. We'll recap. First person through will be our third vote for dummy of the week. All right, let's take a break, and the news is up next. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Friday morning, and we're in the middle of You Big Dummy. We got one more dummy story to read, then I'll do a recap, and we'll open up the phone lines at 312-981-7200. First person through will be our third vote. We are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio. It's Friday morning. Fly Jams Friday. Straight out of context, Nick D. Show Spies also coming up. And you can join us anytime you want at 312-981-7200. That's also for your requests for Fly Jams Friday, where we play a bunch of R&B and we celebrate all funky things on a Friday morning. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man Steve Cochran has your morning drive for this Friday morning starting at 6. All right, let's get back to it. Dummy number 5, dummy number 5. A Kansas driver captured video of another vehicle towing a bale of hay that was engulfed in flames. The video shows the pickup truck pulling a smaller trailer that was carrying a bale of hay on fire. The filmer said, "I saw this guy about 300 yards away when he pulled onto the highway on the other side from the other side of the road. At the time, the flame was very minimal." The filmer said the driver of the truck appeared to be unaware of the situation. Maybe it was the same guy who was driving the truck with the pipe hanging out of the back of it. When he went by, he looked as if to say, "What are you looking at?" I don't think he had any idea of the fire at the time. He continued, "After he passed me, I think he finally looked back and saw his dilemma, but he just kept driving. About 2 miles down the road, he pulled into a farmhouse near where I live, and the local fire department put it out."
"Yeah, I'm worthless, penniless, broke, busted, and
a dummy.
I can't wait to see you starring in your first movie."
"Yeah.
Deep Dummy."
Okay. All right. Let's do a recap here. This is a good week. Good week for dummies. So we've got the driver driving around with the pipe sticking out of the back of his truck hitting cars. We got the guy who stole 150 pounds of waffle batter. The guy who got hit, well, by the way, I saw the video and it's pretty special. The guy who got hit in the face with a rock or a brick that he was throwing to try and break into a window, it bounced back and smacked the guy right in the face. And he went down too, Dan. Like, he was down like, oh.
Yeah, oh. It was great because it was like he's like, "Oh, I got this." "Whoa, no, I don't.
No, I don't. I got to sit down for a minute. I got to lay down here for a minute." And by the way, he's got like a minor light hat on his head. He's got like... Didn't knock that off. Hit himself square in the face. We got the guy who got stuck on a mountain after proposing to his girlfriend, and the guy who towed a bale of hay around while it was engulfed in flames. All right, those are our five dummies, Dan. Where do you stand?
Name of the week, by the way, Peachtree City Police Spokeswoman Odelia Bird.
Yeah.
Everybody loves a good waffle. I didn't know you could sell it on the black market, though. The great detail about the guy with the pipe sticking out is that he hit a street sign as he finally pulled over.
Finally pulls over, smacks a street sign with it, too.
The guy who was doing the bale of hay was like, "What are you looking at? Why are you bothering me?"
I think it's the same guy.
It might be.
I think it's the same guy. Clueless truck driver Johnson.
He's good friends with Cavity Sam. And... but I think, again, just the as you mentioned, the fact that the rock bounced off at him in the face, not anywhere else, and then he did the pause, like, "I'm all right."
He goes down to his knees, and he's like, "Yeah, I'm good." He tries to stand up. He's like, "No, I got to lay down. I got to lay down right here." So you're voting for him?
I will vote for him.
All right. 312-981-7200. First person through will be our third vote. These are good, man. I like the for some reason the pipe sticking out and smacking other cars is very, very amusing to me. And I, like you, Dan, I didn't know that there was a black market for waffle batter. I wasn't aware of that. But because of this, I will say this about the couple that got stuck. I like the fact that they ended the story with the engagement is still on.
Yes, good for those.
That's a great way to end that story. But I too am going to vote for the guy who's got the brick bouncing off of his face, just because of that. I gotta lay down, man. I'm just gonna lay down right here. Everything's moving a little too fast right now, so it's gonna win. But let's see if we have a unanimous vote, and we'll just got a vote from John. John's our listener. Hey, John.
It's unanimous.
It's unanimous. Did you watch the video, John?
Oh my god.
Yeah.
I've got LL Cool J's "Mama Said Knock You Out" playing in my head.
There you go. That's a good one. All right, John, thank you for making it unanimous, buddy. Have a good morning. All right, if you want to see this video, by the way, of the winning dummy, it's on our Facebook page right now in all its glory, and I really highly recommend you check it out. Facebook.com/NickDShow to see a brick bounce off of a guy's face and how he slowly realizes, yeah, this is not good. So go to Facebook.com/NickDShow and watch that now. All right, let's move on to our next Friday feature, which is this one. Oh, wait, hold it. Hold on a minute. All right. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I cross back board, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context, context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context, 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 context.
That's right. This is Straight Out of Context. You know what this is, everybody. This is when you listen to this radio station 24/7. And whenever anybody at any time says something that you can pull out of context, that sounds dirty, makes you giggle, you jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right, Dan, let's begin.
We begin with Ken from Hillside. He's responsible for the first couple ones. Not surprisingly, all Esmeralda.
As, by the way, just want to mention, in case you weren't with us Friday morning, you know, Esmeralda is no longer a regular part of the show. She doesn't work with us on weekday mornings anymore. But we're going to have her in very frequently to fill the gap and have a lot of fun with her and play the games that we play with her and just catch up with what she's doing. She was on with us for most of the show a week ago this morning. She was on with us from 2 to 5. We did Would Esmeralda Buy That. We did Skip Skipley showed up. We did it for the record. We talked about what she was doing that weekend, where she was co-hosting the You, Me, Them, Everybody podcast. And also she filled in with John Hansen over the weekend here, too. So we had a lot of fun. It was great to have her back in studio. And everybody, you know, reacted very fondly to having her back in. And you know, we love Ashley. Love Esmeralda. But
she reacted friskily, apparently, because there's a lot of her.
Okay.
All right. So this first one is also sent in by Stream with Steve.
I think it'll stay up. Okay. It'll stay up.
All right.
And then there's this one.
I'm going to do this one.
What was that? What were we talking about there? There's so many of them.
Fly Jam Friday requests.
Oh, okay.
And this one.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it.
Were you talking about Phantasm?
Yep.
Okay. She did show up. By the way, I want you to know that she and V loved it. I honestly didn't expect her to like it.
Right.
Because it's a it's a very weird out there horror movie. And she loved it. And I was very, very, very happy to hear that.
One more before we break.
Yeah.
Quad Cities Doug heard this one of you.
You're going to love this package. I was talking about Rocky movies, okay? I keep forgetting that you can't say the word package anymore.
Nope.
You just can't. Without it coming back to haunt you. All right.
More Esmeralda after the break.
Oh, there we go. All right. Let us break for some weather here. So when I'm in your neighborhood, you better duck, because Ice Cube is crazy as F-bomb. As I leave, believe I'm stomping, but when I come back, boy, I'm coming straight out of context, context, context. Context. Context.
What's up?
Tell them where you're from.
Straight out of context.
That's right. Welcome back, everybody. It's Friday morning. Straight out of context. This is when we play back all the filth that has happened over the past week on this radio station. You listen 24/7 to this station, and whenever anybody says something that you can pull out of context and it sounds dirty, you jot it down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Dan, before we jump back in.
Yes.
Have you seen the story about the toddler who put his parents' money through a shredder?
No.
Oh, it's the best. It's the best. They were saving up. They had $1,100 in cash, and they were saving it to buy season tickets for a college football team. And the toddler got a hold of it and put it through the shredder.
Oh.
And it's and I don't know if that's a dummy story because he's a toddler.
Right,
he's not dumb. He's just a toddler. But I don't know. It fits into some category. And they have footage. They show the picture of hundreds being $100 bills just shredded. Completely shredded. And they can't do anything about it. He's a little toddler kid.
Right.
He put it through the shredder.
I'm sure the college.
They're going to take care of him. But that's just
publicity.
So ridiculous. I wanted to mention it. It's not a dummy story because we're not going to call a toddler a dummy.
Right.
But I thought this. You got to see the footage. It's all over the place. It's heartbreaking to look. It's just a pile of shredded. Green money. It's ridiculous. So anyway, straight out of context, are we ready to go back?
We are ready to go back. More Esmeralda from Streamwood Steve.
You'd squeeze in your hands.
Wow, she's dominating this week.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Streamwood Steve emailed this exchange between you, me, and Esmeralda.
Have I been doing it wrong? Or am I doing it?
Or you're doing it right?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. Jeez, you know, here's the thing. She's like all over the place this week. She was only on one morning.
Yep.
You know, normally you get a week's worth. You get at least 5 days worth or 5 mornings worth of chances. This was one morning and it wasn't even a full show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Next up, Kathy and Antioch heard this one of Dean Richards.
Swanee's been a big bun man for years.
God, come on now. Come on. Oh, man. And that's true. Okay.
Jesse's responsible for the next couple of ones. First up, Andy Mazur.
That felt pretty good. Thank you.
Wow. Who was he thanking?
Dean. Or Dave. I don't know.
One of the two.
Jesse also brings us this one of Bill Leff.
I think it swings more to the left.
Come on, man. Oh, man. Okay.
And this one of Vic Vaughn, sent in by Brian J. as well.
She likes to get down on her hands and knees.
Oh! Oh, man. Only one person caught that one?
Brian J. and
Brian
and Jesse.
Yeah, okay, only three people did. Okay, all right.
Canadian Bill emailed this one of Cody Gaw.
But you would pull this out like 4 or 5 inches.
Oh, my God. Wow. Jeez, okay.
Streamwood Carroll sent in this one of Tom Skilling.
Visual. With a little ball on the end of the...
Oh, Skilling. Yes, sir. Okay.
And finally, Brian J. heard this exchange between you and Esmeralda.
Anymore. You want to swing that thing back and forth for 20 minutes?
That's what I got to do. That's what I got to do.
We were talking about, it was during, would Esmeralda buy that? And we were talking about the inflatable couch.
The couch pouch.
That in order to inflate it, you have to swing it back and forth for 15 minutes to get the air to fill in. And I thought Esmeralda would not do that, and she said she would. That was not filthy talk. That was about an inflatable couch. So, all right. Shall we proceed?
Yes.
All right, here we go.
What do you do? No one else can dance like so. What's all of us? There ain't nobody.
Spies.
Hey.
Someone took your plans away. So what's all of us? There ain't nobody.
Spies.
Like us.
That's right. There it is. That's the theme for Nick D. Show Spies. This is when you listen to this radio station, as you should, 24-7. When anybody mentions me or the show in any capacity, you get out your magnifying glass and your Sherlock Holmes jacket. Well, he's not a spy. He's a detective. Anyway, you become a spy like Sherlock Holmes. And jot down the day, the time, who said it, and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. Okay, what do we got?
One clip this week from Aaron and Aurora. Patty and Andre were doing their annual Blackhawks preview with our good friends Scott King and Chris Bowden.
Yes.
Adam Burrish had joined them on the phone, and as is the case with every talk show in the nation, they asked about Gritty.
To go outside of Chicago real quick for a minute, Adam, my podcast partner, Mr. Bowden's a big fan of the new Flyers mascot, Gritty. Just wanted to get your take on him
and, deny that.
And what you think of Gritty.
Well, I know Chris so is a mascot expert, so whatever he says, I will certainly follow my good buddy Chris's opinion on that. I've seen that mascot everywhere now. I mean, anywhere on social media, on the internet, I've seen pictures of that mascot everywhere now. So they're certainly doing their job of trying to pump it out as much as they can, I guess.
It was on John Oliver. Did you see that?
It was everywhere.
He looks like a Yeti, or like, you know, an orange grimace.
Yeah. Nick DiGilio loves him.
Yeah.
Oh, so weird.
Muppet on steroids or something like that.
Very creepy.
Yeah, I love him. I love him. And yeah, I mean, he's all over the place. I'll tell you, man, you know, the Flyers are like, thank you, everybody. And they're sending him everywhere. You know, they sent him to John Oliver to do the big thing at the end of the show. It was really, you know, it was Gritty. They sent him to Conan to do a bit, and it's the full on mascot. So like the Flyers are, but I'm wondering how long before a fan hurts him. I just don't want that to happen because you know the Philadelphia fans are just so anyway. Hey, by the way, the Hawks won last night, their first game of the season. It was a fun game to watch. They didn't look real great in their own zone. They could shore that up a little bit, but the offense was there. They had like, I think, 45 shots on goal. They won 4-3 in overtime. We're going to get the Express coming up in just a few minutes. We'll play back the Blackhawks Express, which we do every morning on the show. If there's a game before the day before or the night before. So that's coming up. But yeah, hockey season is officially underway. And they play Saturday night against St. Louis, if I'm not mistaken. If I'm not mistaken. We'll find out. Yeah. So anyway, that's all coming up. So again, if you want to be a spy like Sherlock Holmes, just keep listening 24-7 whenever anybody mentions me or the show. Jot it all down and send it to nickdshow@gmail.com. All right. Shall we play the thing on the thing?
When I grew up on the farm, fly was something we sprayed to kill, and jam was something we put on our breakfast toast.
Jam. Fly jam. Fly Jam's Friday.
Oh, yeah. This is Fly Jam Friday on your overnight radio with my man, Nick D, on 720 WGN.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Fly Jams Friday. Get your requests in. DJ Shagru is ready to go. Just got out of the TARDIS. I'm Wiki Wiki Nikki. Esmeralda the Heart Melda is at home spinning around on her head. And Viggity Viggity Vic is running around like a lunatic in the newsroom. Like he always does every Friday morning. When people start coming in on Friday morning into the newsroom, they have to hide from Viggity Viggity Vic.
Most people, Mary Vandeveld, most people loves coming in on Fridays. Mary?
No, because she's got to go into the newsroom and confront Viggity Viggity Vic while he's running around. So
Dave Bennett's used to it with all the cats swirling around him.
That's true. So this is Fly Jams Friday, everybody. This is when you can call up right now at 312-981-7200 to make your requests for anything funky, anything R&B, anything soul related. That's what we do here every Friday. And I had my first sort of request here, and here we go. Yeah. as our Fly Jam's kicking off. You ever hear of Lloyd?
I believe we played Lloyd a month or two
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, we played a different Lloyd song. This is Get It Shoddy. I don't know what that means, but that's Lloyd. Which is a real, you know, a very strange name for a hip-hop artist, don't you think?
Yes.
Yeah, man, I'm Lloyd. It's not even, you know, DJ or MC Lloyd. It's just Lloyd.
How about this for Lloyd's full name?
Mm.
Lloyd Polite Jr.
Lloyd Polite?
Polite.
Why didn't he go with that? Why didn't he go DJ Polite?
Or just Lloyd Polite.
Or Lloyd Polite. He's just, maybe he doesn't like his last. Maybe he's not polite. And that's why he's just Lloyd. That might be what it is. I think we've discovered that. Mm. He's just not polite. All right. Let's take a break for the news, which is up next. And then more Fly Jams Friday. Get your requests in right now. It's live and happening. Funky stuff. Get them in. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. You do what you do. That's 3LW with No More, Baby, I'm a Do Right. It's another trio of ladies that I've requested in the past.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's 3LW, and that's a Fly Jam. And that's what we're doing right here. We're doing Fly Jams Friday. So get in here right now and make your requests now. Anything funky, anything R&B, anything soul. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And we are live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. It's Friday, everybody. Happy Friday. Have a lovely weekend. It's going to be a rainy weekend, but you can still enjoy it. All right. We got some requests here. 312-981-7200. Get them in. Robert requested this classic. Sing it. Yeah, you never go wrong with that song. I don't care if it's October. You can play September in any month of the year, and it's always a fly jam. And everybody who appears on that song, all 627 members of Earth, Wind & Fire, all rule. So, all right, Robert, there you go. Here's Mary with a classic Janet Jackson request. Yeah, I love that song. You know who produced that song?
Who would that be?
It would be Terry Thomas and Huey Lewis. The fantastic producers Terry Thomas and Huey Lewis. You know, a few weeks ago, Dan, Rich, our buddy Sven Gulli, who appeared on the show yesterday, and if you missed it, that's why you have to have the podcast. That's why you have to have the podcast. He showed Munster Go Home, which was the movie of the Munsters. It's weird because it's in color, and I don't like my Munsters in color. It's a little hard for me to get used to. I don't want to look. I know he's green, but he's not green. It's just weird. It was weird. Anyway, one of the bad guys in the movie is Terry Thomas. Is the British actor Terry Thomas with the gap between his teeth, and he's way wacky in it. I mean, like, he's always a wacky. I mean, look at the guy. If you look at Terry Thomas, you go, this guy's not, you know, this guy can't be a very, you know, the guy clearly doesn't do Shakespeare. You know, bless you. But he's excessively wacky in the Munsters movie. I was laughing my butt off at his ridiculous antics. I've mentioned this before really quickly. He was in a movie called Vault of Horror, Terry Thomas. This is one of those early British anthology horror movies, and I've talked about them before. Peter Cushing is in it, and it's a bunch of short stories like Tales from the Crypt, anthology stuff. And the one that he's in, it plays a jerk husband, and I can't remember the actress who plays his wife, but he's a real jerk to her, and he's real, you know, like commanding and mean to her, and he is a complete neat freak, like screams if something is, you know, out of place or if there's dust anywhere. He's a complete, you know, neat freak. Everything has to be in its place and clean. So she can't take it anymore. So she slams a hammer into his head, and that's one of the images that I always remember of Terry Thomas with a hammer sticking out of his head. It's just like she slams the hammer into his forehead, and it's like stuck in there. And he's like, and his teeth, Terry Thomas, and she ends up killing him. And the payoff at the end, because there's always like some sort of ironic button on these, you know, Twilight Zone kind of horror movie anthology stories, is that she took all of his body parts and put them in jars and really neatly on the as payback. It's like, look how neat this is. His nose is in one jar. His eyes are in. They're all labeled nicely. That's how it ends. But there's that image. I bet if you look up Terry Thomas, Vault of Horror, there, you could see the picture with the hammer sticking out of his head, because it's pretty special. I would bet it's still up there. That would be my guess. All right. 219 area code wanted to hear The War and Treaty. That's the name of the band, The War and Treaty, and the song is Down to the River, and this is for the 219 area code. I've not heard that. That's good.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that before the request.
That's pretty soulful right there. That's good. So did you Google Terry Thomas, Vault of Horror?
Yes, that is something.
Is it that did you get to see the hammer sticking out of his head?
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty great. Now imagine being 8 and seeing that in the movie theater. And being a big fan of Terry Thomas too, because I love Terry Thomas because he was, you know, comedy man. He was in a couple of Jerry Lewis movies, and I always thought he was very funny and very British. And for some reason, I was a total British. I loved everything British when I was growing up. Peter Cushing was my hero. Terry Thomas was hilarious. I became obsessed with Python. I just, anything British, I was all over it. So, all right, let's get a request here from Chuck on WGN. Hi, Chuck.
Hey, how are you?
All right, what's up?
We've got Ultimate Touch, and the name of the song is I Hear Music in the Streets.
I Hear Music in the Streets by Ultimate Touch. Yeah, man. there you go. That's a fly jam. Thank you, Chuck. Hey, Dan, I also Googled imaged Terry Thomas. I'm going to use that as my Facebook.
Oh, yeah, because you got to start the...
I'm doing the horror movie stuff.
Yeah.
Like today, it's going to be like a horror movie each day. My picture. I always change my Facebook, my regular Facebook page, my personal Facebook page. I always change my picture every day anyway. But in October, every day it's going to be a different horror movie. Today, Serpent in the Rainbow. So, yeah, I'm going to get Terry Thomas the hammer in his head. That's definitely going to be in there. Terry Thomas. Yeah, and by the way, he's a great record producer, along with Huey Lewis. Classic stuff. All right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you would like to join us for Fly Jams Friday. Get your requests in now. Funky and soulful. And, yeah, 312-981-7200. Okay, the 773 area code requesting Dan's favorite person, Keith Sweat. Right, man. A little Keith Sweat. Now, what's your favorite Keith Sweat song, Dan?
That would be Twisted.
Yeah. That's a fly jam. We've heard that a couple few times.
That is on the pantheon of First Fly Jams Friday.
Exactly right. All right. Hey, all right, we have to break here. I'm going to give you a little weather, and then we're going to come back with the Blackhawks Express, their first regular season game, and they won. It took it to go to overtime, but they did win. We've got the Blackhawks Express coming up, as we do every morning following the night of a game. There you go. And then we will jump back into Fly Jams Friday and finish up the show for the week. 312-981-7200. You can still get your requests in. Yeah, I know you want to fight it, but why would you try? We got them shaking everything from the hood to Dubai. Yeah, we super big, man. Why would we lie? Come on. 1, 2, 3, everybody. Yeah. All right. That's Eve, man. I don't think we've ever played that one. I think we've played.
Oh, that's a deep cut.
Yeah. Yeah. That's Eve, man. That's Tambourine by Eve, which is a pretty fly jam. Good song. So 312-981-7200. That's the phone number if you would like to make a request. Before we get back to Fly Jams Friday, your requests and everything, I want to mention this. We want to give a quick mention to Juan, who's been a longtime listener. He's been a contributor. He's a DJ at WCYC, where he plays Fly Jams full time, and he's contributed to the show, and he's a longtime listener. Unfortunately, Juan was recently diagnosed with cancer. And our thoughts are with him, and we're hoping for the best. And there is a benefit for him featuring some great bands. So if you want to help out, you should check this out and check it out at www.wcycradio.com. That's wcycradio.com. Juan is a longtime listener, great contributor, and he needs some support right now. So there's a benefit for him featuring some great bands. So you should check out wcycradio.com. And we wish you the best, Juan. Okay, let's see. Here is Dino's request. There is something on your mind, honey. How the way you look at me. Can what you're thinking bring happiness? Yeah, there's some fly jams for you. That was a Dino request. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're loving some fly jams here. All right, so let's see what's next here. All right, this is 630 area code. Would like to hear this fly jam. But when the girl gets down, you can't help but stare. 'Cause that frame's lit and smoking like a signal flare. She's on fire. Ooh, she's on fire. Lord, that girl is smoking on fire. Light her bone up, she's on fire. I think that's another first.
Well, I don't think we've ever played JJ Gray and Mofro before.
I know. It's the first time. How is that possible?
5.5 years.
How is that possible?
I don't know.
What the hell? All right. K Canadian Bill is the next request, so this artist will be Canadian.
Beats from box to box to bass, rocks from blocks and blocks, let your backbone slide.
Yeah. So Let Your Backbone Slide by Maestro Fresh Wes. We never played any Maestro Fresh Wes either, have we?
Another first timer.
Wow.
I did not check if he was Canadian, but I assume he is.
I'm assuming he's Canadian. Every time Canadian Bill does anything, makes any request of any kind, it's always Canadian. Like the Irish Rovers, who, as we discovered, were Canadian. That blew my mind. I have to say that blew my mind. So... All right, we're going to break here for the news coming up in just a couple of minutes, and we'll be back on Monday morning. My dad will tell a joke, and we'll do all the movie reviews. That's all coming up right here on 720 WGN.